Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that...
Puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's going to be okay and...
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at... internet stuff?
Which backfired horribly.
So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2.
I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it.
And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me thinking I was someone else and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway.
That's right, another Subway story! Hashtag Subway 4. It wasn't good enough to be in the other three.
So, it was 5 minutes until closing, and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say,
Thank you for calling Subway. How may I help you?
I was supposed to say, this is James. How may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name.
Idiot.
Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it all right if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something?
No, he said. I just need gas.
I was a little confused. Okay, yes. So you'll get gas, then are you going to stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma, because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not, that's, you have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now. Unless she did. So I said, well, obviously,
You did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning, and I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, "I've been awake for several hours" voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly. Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
What?
I said, you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said, I think you have the wrong number. Okay. Goodbye.
No, I got the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately I got a call from the same number, and I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me. Okay, I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking and I could actually understand her and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes, I am. And also I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me, I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos, then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said, well, they must have given it to you wrong. Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me. Like, this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that. I wanted to make this video about 6 months ago, but then I thought, no, I'll save it for Halloween because of theming or whatever. I don't know. Shut up. I don't have to explain myself. I'm excited to tell you this story.
Wow!
So, haunted houses. I think haunted houses, they're fine, but I don't want to brag or anything. But since the age of 16, I've never been in a haunted house that I was scared of. Granted, all the haunted houses I've been in were free and didn't have me sign a waiver. And when I was little, sure, I was terrified of haunted houses. It's just, I don't know, I think I kept telling myself that none of it was real, and then when I grew up, I just always knew that none of it was real. When you can see the severed hand is made of plastic, all the tension you previously had is kinda lost. And sure, I still get startled at the jump scares, but since they don't stab you or anything, it's always awkward afterwards. Hello? I'm just gonna walk this way now. Or maybe I don't get scared because I don't feel emotions anymore. Who knows? But there's one haunted house experience during my senior year of high school that I will never forget because it was probably one of the most traumatizing things I've ever seen. I haven't seen that many traumatizing things. And also, I won't forget it because I'm about to immortalize the experience by making a YouTube video about it. Alright, my senior year, I was part of my school's drama club. I was a theater kid. And the clubs at the school got to help do some of the activities for the school's fair. The whole school was putting on a fair, probably to raise money or something. It seems that schools are always in need of some extra cash. Have you ever noticed that? So the football team gotta do the dunk tank, the band kids, like, face painted or something, I don't remember, it's not important. And the theater kids, since the fair is in October and that's Halloween's month, we gotta put on a haunted house. Cool. The drama club was separated into groups, and we would each be a scary part in the haunted house. And we got to make the haunted house inside the school, so we had a lot of area to work with, and there was a lot of space in between each scary thing. My group, what we did is we dressed up as vampires, but scary vampires, and we sat at this dinner table, and we decorated it with fake organs, goblets filled with blood, red Kool-Aid, and we had this freshman girl that was laying on top of the table, and we put fake organs coming out of her, you know, to make it look like we were eating her, because vampires eat people. Okay, saying that out loud, I realize that doesn't make any sense. Why would a group of vampires be eating someone? They don't do that. We put a yellow shade over the light above for a good spoopy atmosphere. We had a smoke machine, some ambient Halloween music playing. Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Our group was pretty legit. Whenever a group of people walked by, we would just silently stare at them, and then the freshman on the table would scream at the top of her lungs. She was really good at screaming, by the way. And since we had so much space in between each of the scary parts, when they walked past us, we would get up and chase them. Yeah, it was fun. Okay, so you have to understand that theater kids are very loud, extroverted people. I need to tell you about this one kid who was in my vampire group. We'll just name him Balake. Yeah, Balake. Balake and I were both part of the school's improv club, so we were both pretty funny people, except Balake was just out there. He was loud. It seemed he was just always screaming. I didn't have any classes with him, but he was obviously the high self-esteem class clown kind of kid. So Balake, being the loud and more popular kid, he got to sit at the head of our table. We had done the haunted house for about 2 hours at this point, and I want you to think what it's like to go inside a haunted house. Just going in for 5 minutes, that will already make me feel uncomfortable and sweaty. All the strobe lights, the smoke, and the freshman over here who had to be constantly screaming bloody murder. Again, you did a good job, freshman. And we were supposed to get a break sometime in the middle, but since the haunted house was so popular, we didn't get one break. So I'm a little loopy after doing all this for so long, right? I was totally not ready for what was about to happen. This group of people walk in, and we do our normal thing. We get up and we chase them, but Balake got pretty physical with this one little boy. Like, he kind of shook him up a bit. And I didn't see exactly what happened, but apparently this little boy was holding a fish in a plastic baggie. You know those little tiny fish that are actually supposed to be used as food for bigger fish that you can win as prizes in fairs, and 99% of the time the fish die within 2 weeks because you don't have the right aquarium equipment, so you just put them in water and watch them slowly die? You know those fish? I didn't think people were allowed to bring their new pet fish into the haunted house, but I guess he smuggled it in or something. I didn't see the kid drop the fish. Maybe Balake slapped it out of his hands. That could have happened. I just heard a scream, and I saw a fish flopping around in a puddle on the floor. Fish look like they're in so much pain when they're out of water. I don't flail around uncontrollably when I go swimming. Like, calm down, fish. I'm silently panicking, because the fish looks like he's going to die in 3 seconds if we don't do something. I start thinking of places we can put the fish. The toilet. But Balake, without saying anything, just immediately bent down, cupped the tiny fish in his hands, he ran back to the table, he put the fish in an empty goblet, and then he poured red Kool-Aid into the cup? Nah, I'm just kidding. He got a water bottle from under the table because they gave us water bottles, and the fish was fine, ladies and gentlemen. It all happened so fast, and thanks to Balake's quick thinking, he saved this little kid's fish. The kid was still a couple of feet down the hall. Balake took the goblet in his hands, he walked it over to the kid, he reached out his hand to give the kid his fish. And then he just chugged the drink! Balake! He drank the fish! And this little kid let out the most blood-curdling scream. It sounded like this kid just watched his pet get swallowed by a complete stranger. It was honestly the loudest scream I heard that night. I bet the next group of people behind these guys were thinking, oh man, whatever's next must be really scary to get that kid to scream like that. The kid started trying to attack Balake, and I'm sure if he had the correct tools, he would have murdered him. Balake eventually spat out the fish.
Why?
He didn't swallow it, thankfully. He just kept it swimming in his mouth.
But I mean, that's what you gotta do when you're working in a haunted house. You have to scare people any way you can.
I was just a bystander, and I still wake up in a cold sweat thinking about it. Turns out this kid was actually Balake's little brother, so at least he didn't do this to a complete stranger. Man, you really gotta appreciate what lengths older brothers go through to torment the little brother. Balake's little brother, you might be watching. But I was there, dude. I know what pain you go through. I have an older brother, too. I know what it's like to be Luigi. I mean, he never swallowed any of my pets. He would just steal my food. He also never let me win in Super Smash Bros. Anytime I was about to win, he would turn off the Nintendo. But I mean, I'm fine. Look how I turned out.
Doggies!
Aw, you need a fur cut. Aw, better. You're cute. Aw. Boop, 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 boop. Poppy, stop it. So this is what Arizona grass looks like, everyone.
Can you not?
I remember when I was first starting out, and I only had around 8,000 subscribers, which is a good accomplishment, by the way. If you only have around 8,000 subscribers, then I mean, hey, good job. But I remember seeing one comment that was like, James, when you're rich and famous, don't forget me. Oh!
I'm gonna need some more glue.
Now I forgot who said that, but I didn't forget the comment.
So I just want to thank you all for 500,000 subscriber- wait, what? So I want to thank you all for 600,000 subscriber- wait, again? So 700,000 subscribers, that's quite a bit of people.
Oh, the cake is already falling apart.
So 700,000, that's quite a bit of people, which means boom. Now you might be asking yourself, James, this measly 7-pound tub of sprinkles couldn't possibly be 700,000.
Boom!
Boom!
Pew!
Cha-pew!
Cha-blah!
So in case you didn't watch my 100,000 sprinkles subscriber special, what I did is I put 100,000 sprinkles on a cake, around 100,000 sprinkles on a cake, to represent each of my subscribers. But now I have 700,000. So using math from the first video, each of these big tubs are 7 pounds. So 21 pounds of sprinkles is 541,935 sprinkles. That means we are 98 ounces short. Ooh, did you hear that? Did you hear that whistle with the short? Jeez. Short. So each of these is 10 and a half ounces. So that's 21 ounces. These are 9 ounces of sprinkles. Plus, we have the sprinkles on the cake. And just to make sure we cover all of our bases, I'm going to use this technique that I learned from a Vsauce video. Basically, if we take one sprinkle and cut it in half, we get 2 sprinkles. Then if we cut those in half, we get even more sprinkles. And if we keep doing that forever and ever, we'll get infinity. This is what infinity looks like. Yeah. It smells pretty gross, actually. Oh, it's like Play-Doh. Oh, it's like Play-Doh. It's a snake. Wow, look how many subscribers, like, there's in this one snake. Gross. Ta-da! So let's do this! Oh. So I just want to thank each and every single one of you. Now, some of you might think that you're just some grain of sand in this huge pile of sprinkles. I don't see my subscribers that way, though. Where is the cake? I found cake. It's down there. Oh, I found some frosting. Sorry, I'm going to eat some of you guys prematurely. You know, some people brag saying, James, I've been following you since you only had 100,000 subscribers. And I think that they think that that makes them better. Now, I don't care if you've been following for 2 months or 2 minutes. I appreciate every single one of you. Man, there's like a lot of white ones in this one. Like, what the heck? And what I'm trying to say is, true fans would have been following me since 2012. Like, what the heck? I've been doing this for 4 years, you guys. Can you believe that there's a cake in this? I was going to try and eat some of the cake, but now... Oh, what? Ew, gross. This was in the... If you're subscribed, one of... Oh, gross. Ah, I hit frosting. Seriously, though, thank you all for subscribing. You're not just some grain of sand in this ocean of subscribers. I appreciate each and every one of you. You made this possible. Fire in the hole! And then, just to be safe, there's the infinity sprinkle right there. Okay, let's dig in. Okay, we're just gonna see if we can... Get that out of there. We're just gonna see if we can hit cake. Oh, I forgot to do something. And this is the YouTubers that I like. This is you. Let's see if we can hit cake. It's coming up dry. I don't know how... Okay. Okay, come on, come on. Okay, where's the cake? You know what? You know what? There we go. You made this possible. Oh, man. Like, surprisingly, it tasted really good with all those sprinkles on it. I'm gonna try that again. I wonder what this would taste like
What about the infinity sprinkle? Oh, disgusting. Oh, it tastes like dirt. Why did it taste like dirt? Oh, man.
And look, not a single sprinkle went on the floor. Thanks to this cardboard thing I made. Like, look. Ha. Oh, someone's on my hand. Ooh, this one's on my hand. One lone subscriber. It's off. Look at that. Look how well that held all the sprinkles.
Oh, the cake was in it. Hey, I found the cake. We should bury it back up. Bury that cake!
Woo! Yeah! This is what it looks like to sink in sprinkles.
Doggies!
Is there a cake in there?
Try looking for the cake.
Floor. I think some of your
I don't need to sweep up the floor. My subscribers are all up here. And so I have this cardboard thing. I'm donating my subscribers. I'm just gonna like smash the cake. Ready? Stop it. You guys are like vultures.
That's a good cake.
I know, right? It tastes good with all these sprinkles on it, right? Or maybe it's just the sprinkles. These are just the ground up sprinkles. I call them the infinity sprinkles. They don't eat those, which tastes like dirt.
Infinity looks a lot less pretty than I expected.
Yeah. I don't know why it's brown.
We need to save this for the millions.
You better check and see. Make sure you don't have 800,000 subscribers today.
That is a very real possibility. Put these on the trampoline!
No! Ah!
It's my Zen garden. Thank you. Really.
And publish. A 23-minute long movie review about an 80s puppet movie sure is different than the content I usually post, and even though it was a lot of work, it was fun to try something new, and I think the video turned out pretty good. Am I right, Chamberlain Funko Pop?
Mmm.
Well, it's a good thing I'll never, ever have to worry about this franchise ever again.
Are you sure about that?
When I made a review about a cult classic puppet movie that came out 35 years ago, the last thing I was expecting was that said franchise would get a reboot announced 2 weeks after I posted. And every single day since then, people have been tweeting at me saying, "Hey James, did you know Netflix is making a Dark Crystal series?" Yes, I know. Do you know who you're talking to? If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, then I recommend you watch my video, The Movie That Was Too Scary for Baby James. In that video, I reviewed a scary kids movie called The Dark Crystal. The movie was more or less a passion project of Jim Henson, the creator of The Muppets, and so this movie was done entirely with puppets. It came out before I was born, but I still somehow watched it and got scarred for life. In my review, I said some good things about the movie, like I thought it was a very creative and artistic film, but I, also said some negative things about it, too. As YouTubers, sometimes we forget that our videos are public and can be viewed by anyone. And when we talk about companies, we can forget that real people are attached to those properties who have poured hundreds of hours into these projects, and there's a chance they'll see our videos. And unbeknownst to me, Lisa Henson, current CEO of the Henson Company, saw my video. And for some reason, I never considered that was ever going to happen. If I had known that Lisa frickin' Henson was gonna watch my video, I probably would have worded a few things differently. I don't think she was too mad at my video, though, because she invited me to tour the Henson office, and I got to see a real-life Skeksis puppet, which resurfaced an unhealthy amount of repressed memories, and I got to meet some of the puppeteers, which was a whole lot of fun. Also, before Age of Resistance was released, I got contacted by Netflix, and they invited me and some other Dark Crystal fans to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I signed a non-disclosure agreement so I couldn't spoil anything. I don't remember when that NDA said I was allowed to talk about it again, but hopefully I'm in the clear. When I was in the early screening, I just remember thinking about how cool that these characters in this world were back on the big screen. Netflix has a pretty big screen. And the puppetry and cinematography have only gotten better. And the fact that 95% of everything was done with practical effects and puppets, it's beautiful! There's not a single human in this series, except in episode 10 when this puppeteer's head can be seen for a couple frames. I just checked and they actually took it out, so I still saw it. So much time and care and hard work was put into this series that there was a documentary made about how hard it was to make this series. If any of you are wondering, no, Reunip does not make an appearance in Age of Resistance, nor is there a naked baby Jen puppet. Also, if you're worried that the show wasn't going to be as dark and scary as the original, don't worry. It's darker and scarier than the original. The Netflix family Twitter account was nice enough to timestamp every scary part in the series, and as you can see, stuff goes down in episode 10. Surprisingly, though, they didn't blacklist the scene of the Skeksis peeing out of three different pee streams in episode 6 at 28 minutes and 41 seconds. Really makes you think. So, artistically, this series is beautiful, and it needs to do well because it's left open for a season 2, and I want a season 2 to get greenlit. I'm not going to do a plot summary of the whole thing like I did in the first review because I don't want this video to be an hour long, and you should watch it for yourself. I'm not just going to do everything for you, I'm not your mom. But there are some things you should know before you go watching the series. This is kinda spoilery, but I won't spoil that much. So this alien planet is home to these creatures called Gelflings. They can share memories with each other by holding hands, and the girl Gelflings have wings. There's also this other creature called Agura, who's been around since the beginning of the world. She's basically Yoda's sassy grandma. And then out of nowhere, these tree aliens visit. Stay with me here. And they crack this very important crystal, and in doing so, they split into two different creatures. Their goodness becomes this thing called a mystic, who are dumb, and their bad side become these cool bird monsters called Skeksis, and then the Skeksis took over the entire world, so whoops. None of this is explained in the original movie, and it's not explained in the series until episode 7, but I think that the tree alien backstory should have started the series. Which is why I just spoiled it for you. The original 90-minute film already had so much lore, and this new Netflix reboot just added even more lore? There's even a character named Lore? How much lore is there? Speaking of names, there are a lot of made-up words in this series, and sometimes those made-up words are hard to remember. Within the first minute of Age of Resistance, the narrator tells us that there are seven clans of Gelflings, but then only names three, because there are only three important ones that we should care about. I don't even know the names of the other four clans, and I'm like a Dark Crystal aficionado. Also, there are like 10 evil bird monsters, all with names like Skekso, Skeksil, Skektek, and Shrek. Granted, most of the time they go by their more common names like Chamberlain or the Emperor, but gosh dang it, I can't even remember some of those names. That's the pussy one, and that's the one that made that weird face in the original movie, and that's the one whose voice does not sound like a Skeksis at all.
Now, what vexes you, child?
Another thing you should know is that I thought this series was pretty slow. Maybe it's because I'm impatient, or I'm used to watching YouTube videos at 2x speeds exclusively, but do you remember in the original movie how there was a scene where the Skeksis ate dinner for 2 whole minutes, and visually it was amazing, but the whole time you're thinking, yeah, I get it. Well, there are a lot of scenes like that in the series. Let's take the beginning of episode 2, for example. It starts with a character we've never seen before waking up and putting on his shoes and making porridge and then spilling the porridge on his shirt and brushing his hair, then roughing it up, then grabbing his cleaning supplies.
And it's just a whole minute of this unnamed character getting ready for his day. It's just so poor. Just cut it, please.
And it wouldn't be that bad if this was the only example, but trust me, there are plenty of examples. I just don't want to spoil any of them for you. Turning a 90-minute movie into a 9-hour TV series, you're going to have some filler or some scenes that don't necessarily drive the plot forward. I get that. Luckily, I found this Chrome plugin that lets you watch Netflix at 2x speed, so
it's all good.
Making this video has got me thinking about prequels and how tricky they are to do right. In the original movie, there are only 2 Gelflings left in the entire world, so a prequel that sets up a world with 7 different Gelfling clans, we as an audience know that something's gonna happen, and it ain't gonna look good for the Gelfling. The series also added this MacGuffin Halo sword-looking thing that was supposed to save the world, but the whole time watching that, I kept thinking, no, that's not how the world is saved. The world's not saved until 1982. Also, there are certain characters that we know can't die because they're in the original movie, but boy does this show make you think some OG characters are gonna die. It almost makes me wish that the writers used the 80s Dark Crystal movie as inspiration and rebooted the series in its own separate universe. Movie reviewers tend to focus a lot on the negatives, and I don't want to come off as a hater because I really did enjoy this series and I want a season 2 to get made, so let's end this video with some of the things I liked about it. about this series. I like that we got to see the Skeksis with more personality because they were always so over-the-top evil. The Hunter Skeksis was just on a whole new level of cool. All the other Skeksis never came across as threatening. Like look how slow they walk. I could beat them up. But the Hunter Skeksis, oh man, he was awesome. Do you think he'll be my friend? I like that the series didn't tone down the darkness, and if anything, they amplified it. Because everyone like me should have a deep-seated fear of puppets. There are some great nods to the original Dark Crystal, like when the Emperor Skeksis says,
I will never be dust!
But we all know that's the very first thing he does in the original movie. Celadon is a piece of garbage and does not deserve a redemption arc. The voice acting is amazing. There are a lot of talented people voicing these characters, like Luke Skywalker. A YouTuber named Barnaby Dixon, who made these very cool mantis finger puppets, got to work on a scene where the puppets put on a mini puppet show. And that was everything I liked about Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. So, in conclusion, if you have 9 hours of free time, download the Video Speed Controller plugin, set that bad boy to 2, and save yourself 4.5 hours. But do watch Age of Resistance. Also, executives, if you still need someone to play Rayonip... Hello. Hey.
The very first comic I drew was this fan-made Garfield comic that I did when I was like 9. This was the Garfield comic that came out when I was born. Okay, back to Twilight.
Hello?
James, we found it.
What? What did you find?
The Garfield comic, man!
So remember how I said the first comic I made was a Garfield comic? Of course you remember, I just showed you a clip of it. So apparently my mom kept it. That just amazes me. I need to call her, hold on.
Hello?
Hey, Mom, I just want to say that... you have a hoarding problem. Like, seriously, you need to throw some stuff away once in a while. Okay, bye. Man, I love her. Did you know the creator of Garfield, Jim Davis, is 70 freaking years old? And he's still making Garfield? How do you even... and he's made 14,000 comics? Oh, he has co-artists and he doesn't even draw them anymore. Well, I just lost a bit of respect for my hero. If you guys wanted to start reading Garfield, you have a lot of catching up to do. So you know I love Garfield, it was a big inspiration to me, so much so that the very first comic I ever made was about Garfield. And I know in the video I said that I made it when I was like 9, but looking back at this, I want to say that I was like 6 months old. It's that bad. So, everyone shut up, and without further ado, this is the very first comic I made. Okay, let me explain some stuff. Let's go over this panel by panel. See how there's a graphic in this corner here? Well, Jim would make a unique graphic on every Sunday comic. So this is a Sunday comic, everyone. That means it's in color. Orange is a color. So the first panel, there's Odie, Garfield, and John. And John is saying, happy birthday. It's Garfield's birthday. And they're about to eat this physically impossible-looking cake. So there's this running joke in the Garfield comic that Garfield hates his birthday because he's getting way older. He's in his late 30s now. Jeez! So keep that in mind, because in the next panel... wah! You might not be able to tell from the comic, but that's the sound of a fire truck pulling up. Because in panel number 3, there's firefighters saying, where's the fire? And you know they're firefighters because this guy's holding a fire hose. That's a hose, okay? I was 6, you perverts! I just want to point out that I spelled fire like how it should be spelled. F-I-R. Really, this is the wrong way if you think about it. Fiery. In case you didn't get the joke, there's so many candles on Garfield's cake that it was enough to warrant a visit from the firemen, because Garfield is so old and he just has a bunch of candles on his cake. And then in the next panel, John explains to the fireman that there was nothing to worry about. My cat just having a B-day. Garfield's still confused, though. And then in the next panel, the cake is falling apart as we speak, and we hear another sound effect. It's beep, beep. Now, if we follow the speech bubble, we can clearly see that the sound is coming from the ceiling. John already knows what's happening because he says, oh no. And then in a brand new color, blue, it starts raining on them. It was the sprinkler from above. John runs away going, ah! You know, something similar happened with sprinklers in the Incredibles movie. Oh shoot, I gotta call it The Incredibles 1 in case you're watching this after June 2019. So if I got inspiration from The Incredibles 1, which came out in 2004, that would mean I would be a minimum of 8 years old. So maybe I did make this comic when I was 9. That is, I'm assuming I stole that joke from the Incredibles movie, which I wouldn't put past myself. Alright guys, what if I told you there was a second Garfield comic that I made? I'm a little hesitant to show you because, I don't know what's going on in this one. So let's look at it and see if we can figure it out together. So it starts with a Garfield graphic. It's another Sunday comic. It doesn't seem as excited as the other one, though. Then in panel one, we see... what is that? I think that's a toothbrush, and that's toothpaste. And it says Teth on it. Okay, panel two. John walks up to said Teth brush and Teth paste, and then he says, they say you should use to pee big tooth past. I was in honor classes, you know. Then it looks like he's about to brush his teeth with a massive teeth brush. And then, Garfield, that's not pee, sis. And then, I don't even know. I don't know what that is. And then, there's two? And one's green? And then we see Garfield say, yes, it is. So, like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do. Actually, let's make it a prime $23. So $23 to anyone who can decipher this. I will be taking your guesses on Twitter and in the YouTube comments, and I will give out the $23 to whichever explanation I think explains the comic the best. So not necessarily the first person to get it will get the $23, just whichever one I see first.
G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to... No, that's not how it goes. G'day, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the odd ones out. My name is James, and today and I'm here with... Jeff, what, so, did I say it wrong?
Wait, no, I was... I'm obnoxious.
G'day, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the odd ones out. No, my name's the odd ones out, and today we're the James, and I'm here with Draw with Jazza.
Hi, I'm Draw with Jazza.
Yay.
Hi.
That was hard.
Thanks for having me here, James.
No problem.
On your illustrious YouTube channel.
Oh, thank you. It's so good here.
It's fantastic. No, seriously, I love your channel.
Oh, thank you. I really like your channel too, Jazza.
That's very kind of you. Thank you, James.
Let me plug it for a bit. Draw with Jazza, you make really awesome tutorial videos, and if you're anyone who's tried animation, you've definitely seen at least one of his videos. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I also do random like art challenges and stuff. It's also like entertainment based as much as tutorial based and stuff too. So
yeah.
So hopefully people enjoy whatever sort of content that is, but otherwise I enjoy your content, and let's make some content for your channel that hopefully doesn't suck.
We're playing a game called True Ending. How do I describe it?
Okay, so we're both telling a story. We're taking in turns to tell the story. However, where we both at the beginning share with you what the beginning and end is, James doesn't know the ending. So I'm going to share what my pre-written ending is with you folks watching this, and I'm going to, every time it's my turn, trying to steer him towards my ending without him knowing it and see if I can get him to guess the pre-written ending. And likewise, on my channel, James pre-wrote the ending and I horrendously tried to guess his, and you can go see how that went.
But I'm going to be in the dark.
So how does our story begin, James?
Okay, so our story begins... Let me like jazza this up. There once was a farmer sitting on his lawn chair.
Okay.
Sitting on his... Wait, I wrote that wrong.
I'm going to share my ending, but I'm going to need you to take out your headphones and go la 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 la. All right, the pre-written ending is... And vlogs were never allowed on YouTube again. And I have to try and make that work somehow. Okay, this will be interesting.
This is going to be one of my bubble characters, by the way, with proportions that don't make sense. I'm pressured right now, so it's not going to turn out good. Do you feel pressured whenever you're doing a video?
It depends what type of video. I think collabs like this, when you're sort of telling a story, I think you feel a bit pressured because A, you don't want to hold up the other person and be boring to them while you're making it, and B, you don't want to have the video full of boring stuff, but at the same time, you can edit it all out. But yeah, you do end up drawing like really sloppy, like I find I did with some other collabs like this, you know. But there's no pressure, so take your time.
No pressure, no pressure.
He's a really swell-looking farmer. I really like that dude. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, and then he has to...
That's half a wheelchair.
Actually, there.
Nice.
These are his little farm things.
Yep.
And there's a tree. Can I do a smiley face and a file name? Yeah. Nope, I can't.
I am so ready. When all of a sudden, a Turkish Airlines airplane has, like, you know, big butt supplies in it and stuff. Actually, several Turkish Airlines airplanes.
A fleet.
Exactly. One of which has landed right on his lawn. This is the tail end of the Turkish Airlines airplane. I was just finishing saying to you, there's like, no pressure, take your time. Now I'm like... This is the cargo end of the Turkish Airlines airplane opening. Outside of the rear end of this airplane, light sort of glistening, shining out from there. Okay, I want to know if you can guess who it is. He's a very cool dude. That's your clue. This guy's a cool dude. Not only is he a cool dude, but lots of people know he's a cool dude. And he knows lots of people know he's a cool dude.
Was that a very cryptic clue, or were you just trying to...
That was a cryptic clue. I'm trying to help you guess. Come on, you got to be guessing now.
Shaun White. Tony Hawk.
No.
Well, I only know Shaun White and Tony Hawk.
This is Casey Neistat.
Okay, I should have known because of the camera.
Obviously!
No, you should have made his face look more... Never mind.
Like Casey Neistat? Shut up! All right, this is Casey Neistat, and coming out of the plane also are other vloggers there. Inside these Turkish Airlines airplanes are supplies for millions of Somalian people. I guess they landed in the wrong place because they were too busy vlogging themselves. They showed up on Farmer Joe's lawn, and it was really inconvenient, and it made...
What did the Turkish airplanes have to do with anything?
Well, did you know the recent thing that happened? Okay. So Casey Neistat, amongst other people, by the way, one of these people back here is Ben Stiller. And this is the true story bit, that a whole bunch of social media vloggers and influencers did this big social media campaign to raise millions of dollars to donate food and water to people in Somalia. And the only airline that flew supplies to Somalia were Turkish Airlines. So it's all coming together now. The problem is they landed on Farmer Joe's lawn. And this is where the story continues.
I'll just come up with things as we go. Casey Neistat, who, I'm going to be honest, I haven't watched any of his videos. I thought this on his hair, I thought those were like gauges or something.
It was his hair. He has like longer hair.
Yeah, he has like curly hair. So this might seem mean, especially since I've never seen Casey Neistat. His eyes, he just always seems tired.
Yeah, they do.
Here he is. I'm guessing a tank top. And he's like not even looking at Farmer Joe. And he's like, all right, guys, I'm about to ask Farmer Joe for all of his crops to donate to the Somalians. This might seem too edgy. This might seem inappropriate. Maybe get restricted by YouTube.
Just think of this as promotion for the charity.
This isn't me saying this, by the way. I hate S-O-M-A-L-E-N-S.
I
hope no one in Somalia is watching this.
Wow.
This is Somalia.
Definitely edgy.
Farmer Joe is so cute. He's a really swell looking farmer. I really like that dude.
What a twist. And then here's Casey Neistat. Oh, what am I going to say to him? I feel like I wrote you into a corner here because I don't know where you're going to take the story.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure either. Oh boy.
Yeah, I'll let you do what you do.
I am so glad I'm not editing this one.
You're right, it's on my channel. I brought this upon myself. Just a big frown.
He seems like a much grumpier farmer than he started off being. In the meantime, when all of a sudden, all of these people, right? These people were like live streaming and documenting the whole thing, right?
Oh no.
And they were building this whole narrative of like how much social media can change the world and affect things for good. But then live streamed across the world to millions of people was some old farmer saying, I hate Somalians. That was really bad for YouTube stock prices and stuff.
Oh, no.
So all of a sudden, this is the stock market, right?
I'm just saying I'm noticing similarities to Jaden's where, like, the economy crashes.
Here's where it's going pretty well. And then all of a sudden, you know, like, algorithm changes here.
Oh, no.
And advertisement being pulled from advertisers. And then, I hate Somalians! Boom! Just, like, straight through the bottom. So YouTube stock has just died. In conjunction with all of these drops were people documenting all of this stuff happening, specifically vloggers. Mm-hmm. And so it could be said that... He said cryptically that vloggers single-handedly destroyed YouTube.
I'm noticing some cryptic clues.
In the meantime, here's another little cut. This is Somalia, and they're just, like, really sad. Farmer Joe and vloggers have sort of changed the geopolitical climate as well in a really unfair way for Somalians. This vlogger in particular, this one's Casey Neistat, because obviously he's one of the more well-known vloggers, so he's sort of helping carry the narrative here. I'm sort of relying on him at this, or at least this guy that looks nothing like Casey Neistat, which I'm saying is, it'll do.
Does he wear hats backwards? I've never I've never seen him wear a hat backwards.
I don't know. While we were recording this, I just Googled Casey Neistat. And there's a few of them with a hat backwards. So I'm like, okay, I guess it's a hat backwards kind of guy.
Hillary Clinton. I will be voting for Hillary Clinton. I think I have an idea of where the story's trying to go. Just need to think of where I'm going to take the story. How do you come back from just these awful characters?
We need a hero.
A hero served at the end of the night. And it's gotta be fit for the fight. We need a hero.
YouTube is, it's in the toilet, right? So now people have turned to the streets. I spelled YouTube. So people have to get their videos. This is a VHS tape. It says vlog on it. The only way they can get their videos of Casey Neistat is through the black market. They're in an alleyway. And then this guy right here says, he goes, do you remember when we didn't have to do this for videos? Yeah, those darn vloggers ruin everything. We should create our... Am I close?
It was good throw.
We should create our own YouTube-style videos, our own website. Since they decided they hate vloggers, you know what they you're gonna watch? This is gonna put us on a little pedestal. They're gonna get an animation.
Yay!
No vloggers. So they create their own website. I don't know if you remember the callback from before, but that mistake I made was not a mistake. They create their own. Called YouTube, and then there's an asterisk, no vloggers. I feel like I'm getting close. Am I getting close?
You're so close. Okay, I'll give you a clue, like you did for me. My phrase to end it isn't a quote from someone saying something. It was sort of like an ending to the story, like if it was written in a book.
YouTube.
All right, it's my turn. Okay, this is like right near the ending guess, right? So this is the last move I'm going to make. All I can think to do to try and get you to guess it exactly as I wrote it is that YouTube, the organization, just sort of crashed and failed. So this is YouTube. These are the ashes of YouTube. This was once the proud building of YouTube, and now it's just a pile of ashes. And as such, Google also had to sort of let everything go, which also meant that the name YouTube was no longer existed. Then for branding purposes, these guys didn't have to pay a penny to claim the intellectual property, and they got all of the audiences of all the loyal people with a simple but significant change to the platform, which was, it's your turn!
Well, okay, so this is the ending, right? They look each other in the eye. They both say, and that's how bloggers got kicked off YouTube. Do you want me to guess again?
That was you. Look, if it was a dartboard, you would have hit the barrier next to the bullseye. So, shall I share? Shall I give you the reveal?
Sure, that's pretty close. Okay. Is it?
It's pretty darn close. It's just phrasing, and I think if it comes to that, I wrote down, and vlogs were never allowed on YouTube again, which is pretty much exactly what you just wrote. Oh, hey, Shmalius! And then here's sad Casey Neistat. The end. Is this like a happy ending or a sad ending?
What have we learned? Closing remarks.
I've learned that Middle America farmers can be incredibly bigoted.
We don't really hate Somalians. I should probably look into that donation thing that Casey Neistat's doing now.
Let's just consider this raising awareness for a charity effort.
You're right. Do you watch Casey Neistat, Jazza?
I do on occasion, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if you, like, actually hated vlogs or...
No, I was just trying to make an interesting... I have nothing against vlogs or vloggers. I actually have a vlog myself, which, I mean, now this is awkward, but this guy...
Yeah. He's so happy about it.
At least it doesn't have the... speech bubble behind him.
Well, thanks for watching. Be sure to check out Jazz's video, which will be on his channel. Thanks for watching, and wear your seatbelt.
Don't do drugs. Stay in school.
So I looked into Casey Neistat's charity, and I think it's a very good cause, so I will be linking it in the description. And if you want to donate too, then by all means do so. Me and Jazza have both already donated, so we don't hate Somalians. This video just turned into an awareness for a charity, which is a good thing. Sorry I don't watch your videos, Casey, but good job setting all this up. Thanks for watching and donating if you have, and I'll say this again, wear your seatbelt. Hi everyone, I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hi.
Today we're going to be drawing Pokemon from memory.
And yay!
We're going to do one from each generation, and there's a time limit of 4 hours per picture, so.
Alright, so strap in, this is going to be a long video, everyone.
Alright, so your Gen 1 Pokemon that I chose for you, Omanyte, Lord Helix.
And yours is Meowth.
Meowth?
Yeah, we're starting off easy.
Yeah, this is level one. No reference picture, just art.
My biggest, fear right now is being like, oh yeah, I'm a Pokemon fan, and then, drawing everything wrong. Oh no, I feel like I should have studied for a test. I feel like I'm in school again.
Why is this so hard? He was, in every episode. Does he have a nose? I can't remember if he has a nose or not.
Lord Helix, I'm sorry.
Oh, crap. Oh, that's on the same layer. Oh, no. Maybe since he's, a villain, he should be you know?
He's, a bad villain. Not bad as an evil, but bad
like
as
a bad villain.
Actually bad.
When I'm going to be editing this, I'm just going to have, a picture of it, off to the side.
I really feel like I'm missing something, but I don't know what else to add.
I mean, it's just, a shell and then, something popping out of the shell, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm done.
Should we be giving any, drawing tips?
I always say practice.
That's true.
And people are like, Jaden, no, say something else. I'm like, I don't know what else to say. So you guys just have to practice.
Can't remember if Meowth has a nose. I'm looking at it with and without the nose. So, whatever. Okay, it's done. It's fine.
Lord Helix himself.
Aww. You actually did color it.
Aww.
You're pretty spot on. Yeah. Does he have a nose?
No.
It doesn't? I'm missing, a couple of, these. Whoops. And his eyeballs are like this, you know? Yeah. Okay.
All right, next one.
Next one. Your Gen 2 Pokemon is Houndoom. The grown-up of the Honduras? Is that the baby one?
Houndour and Houndoom.
Whatever, Pokemon Master.
And yours is Flaffy.
Flaffy?
Yeah, do you know which one that is?
Explain it.
Mareep, the sheep one.
Uh-huh.
The very first sheep?
Yeah, the pink
it's
one?
It's the second one.
Wait. So it's like a sheep. An electric sheep. And that's pink.
Yes.
I got it. A little sheep afro. Oh, I'm doing it on the same layer again. Let me just extend the canvas. Here, you know what? I need to restart, a lot of it.
I thought you were going to say, I need to research. I'm like, no. Hey!
It's the whole point of these. Is it weird that I actually sketch with a stabilizer? I think it has ears. Yeah, it totally has ears.
I know he has a skull on his chest. This looks like a seashell.
Something's off. I can't think of what, though. I know it has little, sheep fur somewhere else. I don't know.
I was just drawing Manectric yesterday, and this is the opposite. It's the fire doggo versus electric doggo.
Wait. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the thing I was drawing. I was like, wait, my thing's a doggo? I thought it was a sheep. Okay, I'm kind of done.
Are you done already?
I mean, are we ever really done?
When did we start? We should check the time every time we begin. Mine's not colored, and I think I'm missing some details, but I think it's as good as it's gonna get now.
Okay, well now I'm not done coloring it. There's totally something missing. Did I even get the color schemes right? Oh man. So this is what I drew.
Aww, it looks like cotton candy.
Yeah. Yours is... That's really good. It's wearing kind of a turtleneck skeleton.
You put the fluff on the wrong side of the belly.
Oh, you're right.
All right. Next one. Yours is Absol.
Absol? That's the white little wolf thing, right? Yours is Flygon.
Flygon?
Yeah. Is that too easy or is that too hard? That's too hard.
Which Pokemon did you, stop playing the games at?
The third one, Ruby and Emerald. I was caught up with all the hot new trends up until the fifth one. When I was choosing your, sixth generation one, there were some that I was not recognizing.
Uh-oh, what if I chose that one? Then you're in trouble. People are gonna be like, how do you not know who this looks like? It's easier when you watch someone do it, okay, guys?
Aw, man.
I got the ones that were aesthetically pleasing to me.
You mean the ones that were cute? Is that just how you say it?
I was never, like, into the cute Pokemon. I was, like, the really cool ones that were, like, powerful and stuff.
I have not gotten that far into the drawing, so if, like, if we, like, cut to you and you're, like, almost done, that'd be embarrassing.
Do insects here? They have to.
Do they?
Is that a stupid question?
You got a nice little profile shot of whatever the heck this is. Oh, I'm so glad we're not recording this and putting it on the internet. I think this is my worst one. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
No, I heard it sucks.
Oh, I haven't seen it either, so. If I had time to do line art, oh, this would look so much better. I started doing the line art, but I shouldn't have. Okay, I'm gonna give you a secret. I haven't even seen the original Ghostbusters movie.
What?
Right? Yeah, I know. I wonder if I see this new one, since I don't have anything else to, like, judge it off of. I wonder if I'll think it's better. I shouldn't color. I shouldn't.
I heard all your undos.
Just pretend I colored in the rest of the claws. Here's what I drew. It's, oh man. Don't even give a pity. Aww. Oh wow, yours is good.
Aww.
Yours is, like, really spot on. Yeah, no, I was way off with my Absol.
If Absol had a pre-evolution, that would be it.
And it doesn't even have ears. I'm excited for this one, just because I want to see what you do. All right, yours is Licky Licky.
Oh, no. Yours is Floatzel.
Is that the one Ash had in the cartoon? And it's like a water one?
Yeah, he had a Buizel, which is the first one. And then it's the next one.
I don't know what that looks like.
Floatzel. Like float,
Hello.
And then Zell, as in pretzel. Imagine an otter, but bigger, and he's got, like, floaties on him.
This is so far not turning out that good.
Do you think they make Pokemon ugly on purpose?
No.
Do you know Probopass?
No. Is that, like, one of the new ones?
It's like a rock one with a really big nose and a mustache.
Oh, yeah.
It's really ugly, and a lot of people don't like it.
I know a lot of people don't like the, like Garbodor? No, that's the sexy one that everyone likes. The garbage
one. No, I think it was Garbodor.
Oh. What's the sexy one that everyone likes?
What were you talking about?
I'm talking about the trash one.
I've played all of them except for Black and White 2. That was when I had my falling out. I was like, yeah. But then I came back to it.
Shoot, this is looking like a kangaroo. I kept thinking, like, there's something up here on the forehead. But I didn't know what. And you're like, you know what? I think it would look better with this. Do you think food tastes better when you didn't make it?
Yes. Isn't it like you aren't used to the smell while you're cooking? I saw another thing where, like, people would have two glasses of milk and one was dyed orange.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this milk tastes better, but it was the same one.
There's got to be some way we can turn this into a competition.
Didn't, like, a whole bunch of different stuff happen with Minecraft? Now there's, like, a story now.
Oh, yeah, there's like, an end. You do it, and then, like, you can still play. I know it has the floaties. Now I'm just, like, seriously just, like, adding designs.
I'm pretty much done.
The tail always has some design on it. This is what I drew.
And this is what I drew. Aw, you keep drawing them all really cute.
Are you sure? I mean, whatever, okay. I didn't think you'd get this, but Licky Licky has a Wi-Fi symbol on him. Man, there was a lot I was missing. I knew there was something on his forehead. He doesn't have ears. Yours is Rufflet.
Oh, no.
It's a bird one. It's like a bald eagle. It's like a baby bald eagle.
Oh, okay. That helped me a lot. I was about to draw the wrong gen bird. So you have to draw Crocodile.
Wait, is that the first one or the second one?
It's the third.
What?
Do you still know which one I'm talking about?
It's a crocodile.
Yeah.
And it has...
And it's red.
And it's red. And the third one, he's standing up with his arms crossed. Or am I thinking, is the second one the one with cross arms?
Little fun fact. My first games were Ruby and Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
And my first Pokemon ever was Torchic, and that's why Torchic and Blaziken are my favorite.
Uh-huh.
In the sprite, Torchic has 1 foot up, kind of standing up. I always thought he only had 1 foot, and then he evolved, and he's like, oh, I have a foot now. I have both of them.
I always, you know, Rattatat? I always put in, like, one too many Atatas. Rat-a-tat-a-tat. Okay, I'm starting over. I know its eyes are, like, bulging. That's all I can think of.
Kind of. There's, like, a part that bulges out, but it's not his eyes.
What? I can't. Jaden, I can't. I'm just going to draw a crocodile.
I can see the image.
Right?
In my head.
Same.
But I just can't.
But I've tried to draw that twice, and I've given up.
How close are you to being done?
I mean, I can call it quits. It's so not a Pokemon. You're going to look at it and be like, that's just a crocodile.
This is a weak round. It is a crocodile.
Yours is Inkay.
Inkay?
Am I saying that okay. right?
Yours is Noivern.
What is that one? Oh, is it the bat one? That new yeah. bat one?
Yeah, and he's got, like, the ears.
Oh, he does have ears. The one that I saw that I, like, that doesn't, that, like, I've never seen that before. It was hands coming out of a rock. Like, if you held that one up and, like, a Digimon and you said, which one's the Pokemon? I'd be like, neither of them are Pokemon. This is not right, but I don't care. I'm making it cute.
I wonder how many people are going to dislike this just because we frustrated them.
Like, I'm not taking it seriously anymore. This is why you need drawing references.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with drawing references. I saw a comment one time and it was like, Jaden, you use references to draw your Pokemon. I'm like,
yeah.
What else? Why are you mad at me? Oh, this is going pretty well. And then I just, like, stopped and looked at it and I'm like, oh, this doesn't look right.
I'm not making it look cool. I'm making it look derpy. All right, and then it totally has little bat wings. Throw designs on the wall, see what sticks.
This poor thing.
Perfect. I'm done. All right, this is what I drew.
This is what I drew.
Aw.
Aw! Every time I see him, it's just adorable.
Thanks. Okay, the nose is not right. And man, his wings are a lot crazier than I thought.
You got the, like, the V on his face.
So these were my Pokemon. This one's not really a Pokemon. That one didn't count. What have we learned, Jaden?
Reference photos are important.
Thanks for watching. Yeah, if you haven't seen Jaden's video, you should.
Please.
I don't know if you could tell, but we kind of did a collab.
Bye.
Bye. Wear your seatbelt.
Recently, I read the worst YouTube comment ever, and I can't stop thinking about it. This comment lives in my head completely rent-free. It lives in its own private penthouse. The comment was concerning my upload schedule, and it was, "If anime studios can make an episode of anime in 1 week, then these YouTubers can make a video in a month." Initially, I reacted like, you think that's how this works? You think anime studios post an episode and go, great work, team! Well, time to make the next episode this week! Hope none of you have any plans! I know the working conditions in Japan are bad, but sheesh! I guess all the animators are just slacking off between seasons then, huh? And as I thought about it more, I realized, I can't get too mad. This person is just uneducated about the animation industry and is probably a minor. And then I thought, hey, I know a bit about animation behind the scenes. Maybe I could talk about being an artist and educate people on the animation pipeline. So that way, I won't get any more uneducated comments. For this video, when I say artist, I'm going to be talking about the Google definition of an artist. Noun, a person who produces paintings or drawings as a profession or hobby. You know, the pen and paper artists. I'm not really going to be talking about artists who make music or birthday cakes or take black and white photos of sunsets because I want to talk about cartoons. I make cartoons. Now, it should come to no surprise that I'm pro-artist. Well, not a pro-artist. Are you kidding? I know my skill level. I still can't draw fingers. What I'm saying is, I will support anyone who wants to make art. If you're making art as a hobby, then that's a really great creative outlet, and having something physical as an end result is incredibly rewarding. But if you want to turn making art into a full-time job, you might want to sit down and consider a few things. Like, are you sure you don't want to go to law school? The biggest challenge all artists face is they have to eat food to survive. And in this capitalist society, food costs money. So artists are challenged to somehow take being good at making shapes and turn that into money. I know of 4 ways an artist can make a living. The first way is to be so good at art that people will pay money to hang it up in their house. The second option is to make caricature drawings at beaches and tourist traps. The third option is to sell your plasma. And the fourth option, which is the most common option, is to make drawings that people will pay you to make. And do a little bit of option 3 on the side. Some artists will take commissions, which is basically an artist going, hey, I'll draw whatever you want, asterisk, for $100. And people will go, what the f***? Art should be free! I was going to give you so much exposure to my 50 Twitter followers! Or people will go, I want you to draw this cute animal character I made, and while at first your price might seem a bit high to the uneducated, I understand that art is a time-consuming process and you need to eat too.
So here's a crisp 100.
But another somewhat more stable idea is that artists will get jobs at studios or work for a YouTuber, and we'll be like, hey, we'll give you money if you draw specifically what we want, and if we don't like your art, we'll make sure to communicate clearly what we would like changed and work as a team to do the best we can. Or you're fired!
And that leads us into animation. An important thing to remember for animation is that drawings equal time plus money. Exactly how much time? Well, to answer that one commenter's question, no, an anime studio does not make an episode of anime in 1 week. I think. South Park is what making an episode in a week looks like. And truthfully, that's very impressive. I take months trying to figure out what the heck I'm even going to talk about. Making a single episode of a cartoon from scratch takes about 2 years. Don't believe me? Well, let's see what Yakko from the 2020 Animaniacs has to say in the very first episode. At least, we still think there's a President Trump. You see, the writers are writing this in 2018. Now that doesn't mean it took 26 years to make the first season of the Animaniacs. There's a lot of moving parts that happen when producing an animated TV series. For starters, the whole season of the show gets made at the same time. While the writers are writing episode 12, the storyboard team is boarding episode 3, and the design team is designing the bowling shoes that are going to be worn in episode 6. And it's someone's entire job to make sure that everyone's doing their job. This is called the animation pipeline. And there's so many other departments that I could honestly make a whole other video about this pipeline. If you're interested, I'll do it. But just know that it takes roughly 2 years to make a season of a cartoon show. And that's why when shows reference memes, they're extremely outdated. You know, like a boss! It's beautiful, isn't it? This exterior nighttime city skyline background. This background was drawn by one of my background artists, Annie Loomis, and it took 7 hours to make. And it was used specifically for this clip. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. It lasted for 4 seconds. 7 hours of work, 4 seconds of content. So before we continue, I'm going to make you all sit and appreciate this background for another 4 seconds so I can double the value of this background. Backgrounds can be a time-consuming process, and the whole purpose of them is to be in the back of the ground. They're not even the focus. So storyboarders will sketch out a scene to set the staging through layout, posing, and character expression. And during this phase, I'm trying to find places where I can reuse backgrounds or take pieces of other backgrounds and Frankenstein monster them together to make an entirely new background. Like how I used the city background to be outside this window. Or how I took the buildings from this background, the bushes from this background, and the bench from this background and made an entirely new background. And hopefully, none of you noticed. Am I being cheap? Or cutting corners? Absolutely, but that's the point. That gives another background artist more time to make something else, like this James-themed city skyline, instead of having to draw 20 different backgrounds of a bedroom. We already have a bedroom, let's just do something else, please! It's not being lazy, it's getting the most use, the most mileage out of your hard work. I see this next story pop up on Twitter about every month, and it makes me want to stab my eyes out. If you look at this scene from The Jungle Book, and this scene from Winnie the Pooh, these two similarly proportioned boys are eerily moving in the exact same way. Wait, was this plagiarized? Did someone from Winnie the Pooh plagiarize The Jungle Book? No. Remember what I said about drawings equal time plus money? Well, back in the old days of animation, before fancy graphics cards and floppy disks, animation frames had to be physically painted onto floppy, transparent sheets called cells. So animated movies were essentially a really long flipbook with over 100,000 hand-drawn painted pages. Back then, drawings equaled even more time and even more money. This whole sequence had to not only be drawn 24 times a second, but it also had to have the correct timing to look like a little boy was jumping on rocks. Just because you drew 24 Mowglis doesn't mean they're gonna look good when you play the frames together. So if you're making a cartoon movie in the 70s and you need a scene where a young boy character is just being a dude and throwing rocks, and you need a really climactic fight scene, are you gonna spend the time and money drawing another boy throwing another rock when someone else already did that 10 years ago? Or are you gonna reuse the animation the studio already made and then have more time and budget to make an even epicker fight scene? If these movies were from two different studios, then yes, that would be a completely different story.
But Disney owns this movement of our boy Mowgli, so they're allowed to use that movement on our boy Chris. Turning your art into a full-time job is very difficult. I'm extremely lucky to not only have this opportunity, but to be able to build an amazing team of talented artists to create these cartoons and share them with you. And because of you watching these videos and supporting me, I'm able to reinvest money into the team so we can make better quality content and I can support more artists. It's a win-win symbiotic thing we got going on. So if you ever wanted to get into the art industry, good luck, get drawing, and start putting that portfolio together.
At My Subway, you would spend your entire 5 to 6 hour work shift with only one other person, and you didn't get to pick that peculiar partner you were spending your precious period with. So that meant I was stuck with some crazy characters. And one of those characters was really, really into that new age snorting healing crystals kind of stuff. And he would specifically talk to me about it because I was the only other person there and all we could do for fun was watching bread rise. Since I was contractually obligated to stay, I would just listen to him ramble about how he thought the universe worked. He told me about chakras and how easy it was to open your third eye through LSD. He told me about scrying using black mirrors and that it's a common misconception that you can get stuck in the mirror, but that's just a myth. That doesn't actually happen. Which is a good thing, because getting stuck in a mirror is something I'm constantly worried about as an adult. Oh, and he told me that every illness is in your head and that hospitals can already cure anything, but they're not going to because if they cure you, they're going to lose a customer. So he's just going to stick to his essential oils and non-vaccinated immune system, thank you very much. Listen, you can believe whatever you want to believe, as long as it's not hurting yourself or others, okay? But denying modern medicine? No! No! No, you can't! Do that! No! Since there were still 4 hours of the workday left and I didn't want to argue with him, I would just respond with, uh-huh. He didn't do crack, or meth, or any hard drugs that I know of that would alter his perception of reality. Even though he didn't trust hospitals or doctors, he really believed in the benefits of medical marijuana. If you're ever wondering what kind of person is making your sandwiches, yes, they did give this guy a license to touch your food.
Whoa, dude. My sandwich tastes like colors.
I learned something about myself that day, and that is, I'm obsessed with crazy people. Even though I didn't believe a word he said, I would still ask him questions just to get him talking. Wait, so you're telling me that everything in Naruto is real? Something about talking to him and hearing his perspective was fascinating. This human that I share a planet with exists. What is a crazy person? A crazy person is not someone who has a weird hobby or owns a pet snake. A crazy person is someone who, despite having an astronomical amount of evidence pointing to one idea, believes in the latter. I'm not a psychologist, and maybe I should have consulted one before making this video, but I think crazy people have an unhealthy amount of unchecked distrust and paranoia. I don't know where to even begin talking to crazy people. Their worldview is just so much different than mine. A crazy person will think that someone who has no reason to is lying. NASA's lying about the moon landing. I don't trust NASA. Hospitals are lying about medicine. I don't trust doctors. The government's lying about, well, a lot of things. They're lizard people! Okay, that one might be true. Thankfully, I don't personally know any crazy people. Well, okay, some of my friends are into astrology, but they still get vaccinated, so, you know, you win some, you lose some. However, on the internet, there's an overwhelming abundance of crazy people. I'm guessing crazy people don't go outside because they think the government will target them with directed energy weapons or something. Yeah, only crazy people stay inside wasting hours of their life behind computer screens. One of my guilty pleasures is that while I'm working, I will listen to crazy people talk for hours. It's weirdly my version of ASMR. I've tried listening to podcasts and audiobooks or anything that's good for my brain, but there's something so fascinating about listening to a 50-year-old genuinely tell you about his alien abduction. And it only has 300 views? This man was contacted by aliens, people! Why isn't he on the cover of Time magazine? YouTube will teach you everything you need to know about aliens. Did you know that aliens traveled millions of light years to build pyramids, stomp on our corn, and abduct a couple of crackpots? There's videos of people who will tell you in full confidence about the gray and praying mantis aliens living among us. I mean, the videos barely have any views, but they exist. Most of the views are from me. Okay, all of them. I don't understand how people think the moon landing was faked. There is so much evidence proving that the moon isn't even real. Wake up, sheeple! I gotta be honest, I don't think flat earthers are real. I think they're all just a bunch of trolls trying to get people like me to hate humanity. I'm no rocket scientist, but I know that our understanding of space and gravity is so beyond what shape the earth is. I'm amazed how much free information is available to people, but they still choose not to believe it. So I'm sorry, I just can't accept that flat earthers are real. I mean, I have nothing to back up this idea, though. I guess it's just a crazy theory of mine. Wait. Here's a lighthearted conspiracy for you. Some people think that the creators of the Sonic movie purposely made the design of Sonic bad in the first trailers as a marketing ploy. Everyone was outraged about the bad designs and ended up talking about it, giving the movie free promotion. Meanwhile, the executives were planning to use the better designed Sonic all along. The evidence for this is... well, I'm talking about the Sonic movie right now, so I'm contributing to the theory that this was all for publicity. Another piece of evidence is... look at this. What is this? There's no way that any executive or anyone with two eyeballs would okay this ever. And honestly, I might have believed this conspiracy theory if this movie didn't exist. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. But because it's current year and these types of things can still get past test screenings, I think sometimes Hollywood is just no good. I could be totally wrong though. If anyone watching worked on this movie and wants to be a whistleblower, let me know in the comments. Another rabbit hole I fell down was discovering a group of people called targeted individuals. Targeted individuals are a group of people that think the government is sending NSA agents to harass them. And this isn't just the American government, it turns out that every government in the world is harassing random citizens. They claim that they're being harassed because the government is trying to silence them for speaking the truth, when in reality, they're not speaking anything remotely true. A targeted individual will say things like, "People keep following me. There's a white van that's been parked in front of my house for hours. The government's been using electromagnetic radiation to transmit sounds and thoughts into my head." And the whole time I'm watching these people, I'm thinking, "Yo, that sounds like schizophrenia, my dude. I don't know your life. Maybe you just got out of a really bad cult and you do have stalkers following you. Okay, yes, that happens. But it's not the government." One targeted individual I saw said that the government attacked them with a directed energy weapon and that they've been having migraines and coughing up blood. And I'm just flabbersmacked that someone actually believes this. How do you tell them, "Yo, the government's not harassing you. You probably have something going on in your digestive system. You need to see a doctor and a psychiatrist." And it's easy to point and laugh and make fun of these people, but after hearing their stories, I just feel bad for them. They are going through some major mental stuff, and I think they just need a friend to talk to. Most conspiracies can be disproven with a little bit of research, so it's important to think critically and not immediately believe everything you hear online. And if there's not enough data to make a judgment, then it's okay to say, "I don't know," or "I need to look into this further before making a conclusion." Viral misinformation punishes everybody, so it's important to do research, tests, and evaluations to form a concrete judgment before you hit that retweet button. There is one conspiracy theory, I believe, and that is that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill... The computer screen has a horrible glare, so that's why I turned it the other way. Fair warning, guys, this video doesn't really have a point. I'm already thinking of possible titles for this video without it being too clickbaity. Maybe I can do one of those all caps titles, see how that feels. I'll think of something. Speaking of unprofessional, do you guys like my setup I got going on here? I have my Razer chair and this Tempur-Pedic pillow. I'm at my grandma's house. The internet kind of sucks. Did you guys have a good Christmas? Also, you guys, this is the first video I'm making with 2 million subscribers. Thank you for that. I don't have any sprinkles on me right now. One thing I want to point out is this comic I made 4 years ago about this guy saying, "Thanks for 2 million followers." And then at the bottom it says, "That's what I'll say when I get 2 million followers." I'll talk more about it in the subscriber special, but I just wanted to say, thanks. I'm glad you came along. So, okay, let's talk about the actual video now. So I'm from Arizona. I don't get any snow where I live. My childhood wasn't filled with snowball fights and building snow forts and falling into a freezing pond when you're ice skating. I think one time when I was a little kid, I really wanted a white Christmas like all the other kids in the movies get. And so I was really hoping for one. And then on Christmas Day, it was foggy.
And I also wasn't in Arizona that year. But I mean, it still counts. And I'm not in Arizona right now. I'm in a place that snows. Me and my siblings have only ever built a snowman once in our entire lives. And that was with the help of our brother-in-law. And he made it look so easy. But now we're gonna try and do it all on our own. So have fun watching us do that.
You ready to go, Poppy?
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like this one!
Would that be considered animal abuse?
No.
Don't like drop her, but like set her down. Okay, well that didn't work as well as I wanted it to. She just laid down. We can build it's a snow blanket around her. Okay, grab a bucket. We're good.
How does my hair look?
Good.
Good. Okay, so we're gonna start by building a snowman. We're gonna make him bucket shaped. So we'll see how this goes. He'll be right here. Okay.
Wow. Oh,
look at that. Okay, you wanna just do it on top? You wanna do like a pyramid sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do like a pyramid sort of thing. So then there's one. Oh,
hello.
One right next to it. Oh, look. Look how smooth that one is. It's like butter.
This isn't how you make a snowman.
This isn't? No! No!
It's so hot. Oh. Did you break it?
Yes. Don't worry, we have to.
We have to buy Grandma.
Poppy, you wanna come out here? Come out here in this winter wonderland? Nope. All right, we did some off-camera work. This is what we have of our snowman so far. Yeah. Look at that. Snowman's gonna be good in no time. It's gonna be so fun when it's done. We didn't name him yet. Well, maybe a name will come to us once we decorate him. What should we have these as? Gotta really cram the Eggos in there. Get the other eye in there. Oh, I know what we can use for a mouth. We have these pot stickers. Maybe it's gonna be his mustache. He's angry.
He kind of looks like you.
I got it.
I'm not gonna lie. Like.
And then we'll have sticks of butter as the buttons. Okay. Yeah. And then I'm gonna put on my very own scarf.
He's cold.
He's cold.
She's beautiful.
And it is completed. My leg's
James,
stuck.
James, you guys spent so long on that.
I'm gonna birthday.
My leg is stuck. Oh, it's so cold.
Stuck.
You're gonna well, break it or anything. That'd be awkward.
But, I'm afraid I'm gonna have to call the police now.
That's fun. We didn't even know his or her name.
Ooh, we're back here now. I wanted to bring up this thing my buddy Tim Tom said. He said that he can run a mile in under 7 minutes. So I was going to do this bit where I would go to a high school and then run on a track and prove to him that it was physically impossible to run a mile in that time. But all the tracks here were covered in snow, and so I couldn't really see him that well, so I didn't do that. And I was going to talk about this in that bit, but I guess we'll do it here instead. So I actually asked my family for exercising stuff for Christmas because I kind of want to get in shape. And one of the things they got me was this VHS of this guy named Tony Little.
In my videos, we don't count repetitions.
It says copyright 1993. So this is older than me. I put this into my grandma's VHS, I watched it, and I actually liked it. And I'm being totally serious. One thing I will say is the cover is a bit misleading on the length of Tony's hair.
Introduce you to Kelly!
And then I thought, I wonder what this Tony guy's doing today. So I looked him up and he's actually still making things and selling them. And he was pretty active on Twitter, so I tweeted to him saying, @TonyLittleReal, Look what my family got me for Christmas on VHS. Just started watching it. I'm not a wimp. Best present ever. Couple of days later, he responds with, "The odd, obviously not a wimp. My mom was an art teacher. Art is life. 7 million sold. You can do it." And then a smiley face with the nose, so we know this is the real Tony Little. So he knows that I'm an artist. So I gave up running a mile, but I still wanted to get in shape, so...
That's the most I've ever been. I need the tapes.
Then it's intermediates, 60 to 90 seconds per exercise at your own pace. Then I say, see ya, wimps.
See ya, wimps.
Is this shirt supposed to... Is this... What? This shirt is... It like... Yeah, it's supposed to go down to here, right? Don't you guys hate it when you're making a video that you spent weeks on, and then you're watching through the whole thing to make sure everything's all good, but then for some reason you press Control V, which pastes what you had copied, and then for some other reason you had copied some text that was supposed to go at the end of the video, so it pastes the text in the video, but you keep watching it and you think the video's all good, so then you export it and you post it to YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, iFunny, Tumblr, and your own website, and then you rewatch the video on YouTube, and then you notice the mistake, and at that point your options are either take the video down, edit out that one frame, and then re-upload it to all those websites, or just deal with it. It's only in there for one frame. People aren't gonna notice. I'm on Christmas break! But then, everyone on Twitter sends you pictures of that one frame going, "Oh, what's this?" Don't you just hate it when that happens? Can one of you make a video that's the odd ones out chaperoning video, but that one frame is taken out? You know, that frame. This is the only time I'm allowing you to re-upload one of my videos, but you have to take out that frame. That's part of the deal. This video didn't really have a point. If you didn't know, I make comics too, so if you want more The Odd Ones Out content, then check those out. Happy New Year's! If you don't celebrate New Year's, what calendar are you using? Let's end the video with Tony's catchphrase, which is, "You can do it!" And then the smiley face with the nose. Merry Christmas.
I understand that there are things that I don't understand. For example, theoretical physics or how to make friends. But I do know that the world is not flat, that vaccines work, and listening to people tell me otherwise is admittedly a guilty pleasure of mine. Whether it's conspiracy theories or horoscopes, I love watching people pour their heart into something they genuinely believe in, only for me to go, "I disagree." But please, continue. There are some beliefs that I don't agree with, but are absolutely fine to believe in, like thinking bucket hats look good on someone. But I think we can all agree that some beliefs can be incredibly damaging to a person, or even humanity as a whole, like the anti-vaxxers. Or racists. So I discovered a new trend, and I'm not sure if it's just kids being kids or a mentally damaging belief system, but I'm still gonna talk about it and explain to my audience the importance of critical thinking and to notice the red flags and dangerous beliefs. So, what am I talking about? I unfortunately fell down a rabbit hole and discovered a community of mostly kids on a phone application called TikTok doing something called reality shifting. This, by the way, is not a small community of like 20 people. There are amino groups with thousands of members, videos with hundreds of thousands of views, and they have their own acronyms. OMG. Reality shifting stems from the belief in parallel universes, which, I gotta be honest, I'm not completely sold on that idea to begin with. You say that Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead, but cats have 9 lives, so are 4.5 cats dead? How is a cat half dead? Either way, someone supposedly very smart has said that every decision you've ever made has caused the universe to copy itself and create a new reality where you made the different decision. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, but somewhere there's a reality where I ate my hamster for breakfast. Does that mean I create a new universe every time I scratch my butt, and somewhere there's a James with better manners? So times that by 8 billion people making decisions every day, plus the decisions made by, like, dogs and jellyfish, right? Those count, I think.
and we get roughly infinity total realities. If you've seen Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. The reality shifting community says that since there are infinite realities, then there's a reality where GameStop stock is incredibly low, or that COVID didn't happen. Or perhaps there's even a reality out there where Hogwarts is real, and a messenger owl just dropped off your acceptance letter. And through the right meditation, you can transfer your consciousness from your current reality, your CR for short, to your Hogwarts desired reality, your DR. And for some gosh darn reason, Hogwarts is the number one shiftable destination location. But obviously, it's not just Hogwarts. Any fictional universe is fair game. You could go to the Hunger Games or Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure why, though. A lot of bad things happen there. And since all logic is thrown out the window, cartoon and anime realities are shiftable destinations. Because if Schrodinger's cat taught us anything, it's that there are some universes that are just 24 drawings a second. So because there are allegedly infinite realities, people will write down what they want their desired reality to be, and this is called a script. It's funny, you know, normally scripts are made to tell fictional stories, but these people think that what they write down will be 100% real. And you can make a script of whatever you want. You can say, I want to shift to Hogwarts and be in a relationship with Draco Malfoy. I mean, not me, this is just an example. Now listen, you're a smart kid, okay? Hopefully, I don't have to explain to you that that's not how life works. If you believe you can hop into different realities, then that's great and I see no problem with it. Is what I would say in a different reality, but in this reality, I have a lot of questions. If you can shift your consciousness into a different version of you, what happens to the alternate reality you's consciousness? You're just taking over someone else's body. This other you had a life and a family, unless you're going to a YA fantasy novel, and you just took over their whole body. What if there's a you in an alternate reality that's like, I want to live in a reality where there's a pandemic and I'm sadder, and then they shifted here? What happens to your consciousness? You don't trade. The reality shifting community says that when you shift, you leave behind a clone of yourself. Obviously. So when you shift, there's someone's consciousness unaccounted for. What about the realities where one of you had waffles for breakfast and the other had pancakes? Both of these yous are pretty much the exact same. So then both of you will want to reality shift to the exact same Harry Potter reality. Do you have to share a body with the other yous that have shifted to the same reality? Are you telling me that Voldemort and any fictional villain is real? How come half of us didn't get turned to dust when Thanos snapped? If anyone can reality shift, are you telling me there's a chance that Voldemort could download TikTok and reality shift here? If you go to Hogwarts, you're leading Voldemort right to us. How can there be a reality where magic is real? Sure, I don't know how parallel universes work, but they're parallel, so the laws of physics should still be the same, right?
But James, I know that reality shifting makes no sense and is impossible, but then why do so many people claim to have shifted?
Because they're dreaming. Shifting happens when you fall asleep, and if you fill your subconscious with things from your desired reality, would you be surprised that you had a dream about Hogwarts? Something about this trend doesn't sit right with me. A lot of the reality shifting TikToks were done by kids, and kids, as you know, can get really obsessed in a fandom and do some cringy stuff. If these kids were making fanfiction and writing themselves on a date with Bakugo, that would be totally fine. Healthy even. Heck, even if these kids flat out said, I love Harry Potter so much that I want to manipulate my dreams to be about him, that would be fine too! But something about actually believing that you're astral projecting into a fictional universe? I don't know, that level of obsession just feels unhealthy, my guy. And also, back off Bakugo, he's mine. The problem with reality shifting and actually conspiracy theories as a whole is that they pretend to be based on factual evidence when they're entirely a pseudoscience. You start off with a scientific idea, multiple realities, and then you make up whatever you want and use what the scientists have said about multiple realities as proof. Even though no scientist has said anything about being able to move your consciousness outside of your body, or that you leave a clone of yourself behind when you reality shift, or that cartoon universes exist. I've seen people in videos say that they've done research on reality shifting, but I feel confident in saying you didn't get a degree in quantum physics. I want you to cite your sources and show me the studies, because research isn't just believing what other people said on TikTok. These TikToks get impressionable kids to believe in reality shifting in pretty manipulative ways, saying that if you didn't shift, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. When you get these doubts and say, oh, I can't shift, I don't even know if it's real anymore at this point, try and ask yourself after, but what if it's real? What if I can shift? You want to find out, do you? I get it. Harry Potter is a cool world. That's why they made a whole theme park about it. Who wouldn't want to drop out of a Muggle public school and live in a castle with a bunch of soft British boys? And also magic or whatever. But you need to be mindful about where you're getting your information. I've watched hours of flat earthers and anti-vaxxers talk about their beliefs, and these people get their information from non-credible sources, and they end up pushing more fake information online, and it creates this echo chamber that warps their worldview. I don't want kids watching these TikToks or going on Amino and essentially get lied to and think this is how the world works. I'm hoping that all of these people will look back at themselves in 10 years and go, yeesh, I can't believe I was so obsessed about a thing, I literally tried to astral project myself across the multiverse. Right, Bakugo? I know that this reality can suck sometimes, and right now it's looking pretty bad. But like it or not, this is the one reality we get. A lot of things may be out of your control, but according to theoretical physics, we make a lot of choices, and all our choices lead us down different paths. So what you need to do is not give up on this reality for a literal fictitious one, but instead to make choices that will make this current reality your desired reality. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk.
Hey, are you going to make a video about this?
Probably not. Are you?
Only if something interesting happens.
I want to tell you all the story about what happened at MrBeast's 100k YouTuber Battle Royale. This is going to be quite a long video, so some of the drawings are going to be done by other people, and I'm going to be recording this on different microphones, so sorry if I sound different. I'm not that sorry, I don't care. And I want to tell this story in its entirety. I don't want to cut anything out or split it into two videos, because the story I'm talking about is already up on MrBeast's channel, so what's the point of making people wait for a conclusion when you can just go and see what happened? If you've already seen MrBeast's video, which a lot of you probably have, then this story has already been spoiled for you, and you know how it's going to turn out. But you should still stick around, because I'm going to go into detail about the events that led up to the big fight, and sprinkle in just a healthy amount of embellishment. And if you live under a rock and don't know what I'm talking about or who this MrBeast character is, then pull up a chair and let me explain studios, because this is going to be quite the video. This is MrBeast, a 20-year-old YouTuber that, after a couple of years of making cringy Minecraft intro compilations and how much money does X YouTuber make, he started uploading some unique challenge videos, but they weren't your normal challenge videos you see on YouTube, like the Cinnamon Challenge or the In My Feelings Challenge. He challenged his endurance by making videos like reading the dictionary in one sitting, or counting to 200,000, road to a million. Then he started one-upping his challenges by making some big and questionable financial decisions, like buying 100 T-Rex costumes or literally giving out tens of thousands of dollars to people. His videos got insanely popular, which meant he earned more money, which meant he could spend even bigger quantities of money on videos and in turn get more views because of how crazy they were, and then he got more money, and the cycle just continued, making him one of the fastest growing channels on YouTube. In 2015, he celebrated his 7k subscriber milestone, and in 2019, he's got over 16 million subscribers. The dude's been blowing up. And about a year ago, I sent him a Twitter DM saying, where do you buy so many things in bulk? Like, random example, sprinkles. Because I just wanted to know who his supplier was, because Walmart banned me. We ended up chatting on Discord for a bit, and he told me that the reason he makes videos is to entertain people. And with the amount of money he's giving away, and the fact that he's probably losing money on some of these videos, it's obvious that he's not making these videos for the money. And I respect that. Also in the call, he told me he was playing Fortnite, and I said that my favorite video game was Tetris, and he said, yeah, you seem like the kind of person that would like Tetris. What's that supposed to mean, Beast? Well, who's laughing now? Tetris is the best battle royale game out there. Tetris 99. Download it for free on the Switch today. They don't sponsor me. So that's who MrBeast is for the six people watching who didn't know. Fast forward to February 2019, I'm at VidCon London, me and Dave from Boy in a Band were getting ready to perform Life is Fun in front of a bunch of UK blokes, and I was browsing Twitter and I saw this tweet from the Beast himself. Attention Epic Gamers. On March 6th, I'm hosting an in-real-life YouTuber battle royale with airsoft guns.
Royal. That says Royal. I'm just going to use a computer voice.
Winner gets $100,000. It will be in LA and similar to Dude Perfects' his video, which BTW I really enjoyed. Reply Fuhrer Yautaber and Wandin.
The tweet was only sent 10 minutes ago. It was pretty fresh. And looking through my pocket calendar, I wasn't doing anything that day. I could make it to the event. I asked Dave, do you think I should do it? I forgot what he said, but he probably said something like,
oh yeah, man, you'd be so great at it. When did you get so handsome? You're the best!
So I replied to the tweet, I can make it. Then I got added to a group chat with 6 other YouTubers, so I wrote, hello, competition. And the very next thing I saw was MrBeast added Logan Paul. And my mind went, Logan Paul? YouTuber's number one storytime animator, Logan Paul? Recently came out as a flat earther, Logan Paul? That Logan Paul? But then Logan Paul left because he's a coward. So in the group chat, MrBeast explained the rules. It would be an airsoft battle and everyone would have 3 balloons attached to them. And once your 3 balloons got popped, you were out. This match wasn't going to be a free-for-all like the Hunger Games. We were going to be on teams of 3. So I was going to get paired up with 2 random people. I mean, I would have preferred if one of them had been a Paul boy, but no big deal. Hopefully, whoever my teammates are would know what they're doing and carry the team, because I sure as heck wouldn't. Jaden Animations was also at VidCon, and I told her, guess what I'm doing?
I saw your tweet. That's pretty epic, James. You're the best,
she said. I said, Jaden, the battle's going to be in teams of 3. I don't know anyone else that's going. Do you want to go to war with me? Now, this was a first for me. Never in my life have I ever had to ask someone, hey, do you want to fight in an airsoft battle royale against a bunch of other YouTubers for the chance to win $100,000? And Jaden said,
yeah, sure.
I asked MrBeast, are you still looking for more people for the YouTube Royal? My friend Jaden is interested, and I think it would be good if me and her were on a team because our channels are so similar. And he replied with,
yes, she got Pewds and Rewind. 100% want her in.
And I was like, oh, yeah, she did do that. I probably didn't have to send you her channel. So Jaden never publicly said she was going to be in the fight, but she was. Surprise! MrBeast sent us a list of people that still needed to be on a team. Since it was only me and Jaden, I got to pick someone from the list to be the 3rd member of our team. It made me feel like the popular kids when they got to pick teams for kickball. First time I got to feel that experience, actually. I noticed one name on the list. Anthony Padilla. I've been to conventions, and I've seen how young some of you are, so I gotta explain who Anthony is. Just bear with me, big kids. Before some of you were born, there was this big YouTube channel called Smosh. And when I was 12, that was one of the YouTube channels that I watched. So imagine how gleeful I was when a big part of my childhood asked me to do a couple videos with him to go up on his channel. Since Anthony and I had already done 2 videos together, and he's done one with Jaden, and he pet my dog, I thought we were close enough to have him on the team. Also, 2 of the 3 people on our team are vegan, so we decided to name ourselves 66% Vegan. That's actually not true, I made that up. The day was fast approaching, and I'm gonna level with you, we did not have high hopes for winning. Anthony tweeted out,
tomorrow, I'll be in MrBeast's 100K YouTube Battle Royale with my teammates The Odd Ones Out and Jaden Animation. Between us, we see a total of 3 hours of sunlight a week. Please, send us words of encouragement and support.
Everyone in the group chat was hyping up how good they were at shooting guns and how seriously they were going to take this. Meanwhile, between the 3 of us, we had played a total of 2 Fortnite games and a lot of Tetris. We showed up to the arena, and I barely knew anyone. Keemstar was there for some reason. I don't know if Keemstar likes me, though. At first, I wasn't too worried about getting hurt, because people were going to be aiming for our balloons, not our bodies. But when I saw the gear, the balloons were just about right over our heads. So everyone was going to have to William Tell our balloons off. No big deal. None of us really need our heads anyway. No big deal. Before the main fight, there were a couple of practice rounds that were happening on a smaller field, and during the practice round, our team went into this little fort. Anthony's gun wasn't working, Jaden didn't know how to put the magazine in, and I didn't know how to aim. As soon as we left the fort, all of our balloons got obliterated.
Oh, baby, a triple! Oh, yeah!
Like I said, we didn't have high hopes. Whenever I go to an event, a question I get asked a lot is, will you make a video about this? And every time my answer is always, if something interesting happens. Look, I'm sorry, kid. I'm not just gonna make a video like, hey guys, so I went to this school and talked to these kids about being a YouTuber, and everyone was well-behaved and super nice. Anyway, that's going to do it for this video. Be sure to check out the video where I went to Australia and signed posters for 2 hours. So I asked Jaden, are you going to make a video about this? And she said,
probably not. But if you want to, you can.
And I said, yeah. Only if something interesting happens, though. And Jaden, I just want to say, thank you so much for giving me this. After the practice round, our team sat at a lunch table by ourselves, because We didn't have any friends. And Jaden and Anthony talked to each other about being vegan, and I ate my chicken pesto sandwich as discreetly as possible. We also talked about potential strategies. Like, if someone started shooting at you, then just shake your head as violently as possible so that way they can't hit your balloons. Yeah, that'll work, we told ourselves. But deep down, we knew it wouldn't work. I just hope we're not last, I said. I'd be happy if we made it in the top 10. There were a total of 13 teams. I would have been happy if we were in the top 10. I didn't expect to pop anyone's balloons. Just as long as we didn't lose horrifically, I'd be happy. So, I know how these videos work. About 40 people showed up to the event. There's no way that everyone was going to have an equal amount of screen time. If you're not interesting, then you're not going to make the cut. So, realizing this, our team also wanted some screen time. I drove an hour to get here. I didn't want it to go to waste. Some people took 14-hour flights from Australia to get here, so I hope they had a fun time. Yay! The match was about to start, and our team got dark green balloons, and we saw another team that had lime green balloons. We talked to the other green team, which consisted of What's Inside, his son Lincoln, and Casper Lee. We joked with them like, hey, other green balloons, since no one can tell us apart, maybe we should team up. Okay, see you later. But the way the match played out was interesting. We didn't get to choose where we started. The map was split up into 13 different zones, and before the match started, someone on your team would pick a number out of a hat, and whichever number you got would be the zone you started in. That way, when the match started, the teams would be equidistant from each other. And to make it more interesting, you didn't begin the game with any weapons. Those were scattered around the field. And the closer you went into the center of the map, the better the weapons were. Supposedly. That's what they told us. So we all put on our paintball masks and GoPros. One of the Hunger Games workers walked us to our zone. We looked around and saw one gun super close, one gun at a medium distance, and one gun pretty far away.
Okay, Jaden and I will get the close gun. You go get that medium gun and cover me while I get the far gun.
Then an air horn blasted in the distance, and the game began. I ran to the medium distance gun, quickly snatched it, and ran back to where the group was. Jaden had her gun, but Anthony was empty-handed.
Someone already grabbed the far gun,
he said, and the team that grabbed it was the white team. And it didn't take long for them to start sending BBs our way. There wasn't a structure we could hide in, and Anthony had no way of fighting back.
Dude, I don't have a gun, so I'm like...
The white team pushed us into a corner of the map, and a chain link fence stopped us from retreating any further. Looks like we're not going to make it in the top 10 after all, vegans. But then we saw the team to our right, and it was none other than the lime green team. With very little options, we walked up to them with our hands in the air like we just don't care, hoping that they remembered the very unofficial agreement that we had between us greenies. And fortunately, they took pity on us. They let us walk past them without shooting us, and they gave Anthony a crappy handgun. And we all agreed, okay. Let's not shoot each other.
We'll remember this.
We later found a better gun for Anthony, and we also found a pretty good hiding spot that let us shoot at other teams while also keeping our precious balloons covered. Every 7 minutes, the refs would close off part of the map, making it smaller, forcing the teams to get closer to each other, just like the Hunger Games. But in the meantime, we were perfectly fine waiting in our hiding spot for the 7 minutes to go by.
Would you rather eat a whole pack of cigarettes?
Smoke grenade over there.
Or
eat or smoke.
Eat. Ew. A whole pack of cigarettes.
Oh, green.
Or sit in a dumpster overnight.
Sit in a dumpster.
No, it's full of garbage and poop.
I'd rather eat the calorie, right?
Mmm, protein! Alright, I think we gotta make some headway or else we're just gonna be doing nothing.
Well, if we're not losing...
True.
And then after the 7 minutes, the map shrunk, and we and the lime green team got a little closer together, and What's Inside asked one of the refs, hey, is it okay if we team up? And the ref said, I don't know, I just work here. So cool, we teamed up. It was funny because we still didn't completely trust each other. One time we moved locations, and Casper told Lincoln, you go in front and I'll be in the back, so if they try to shoot you, I can get them. Well, there go my murder plans. We shot at other players, and they shot back. Lime Green Team lost some balloons, but I still had all three of mine. The map kept getting smaller and smaller, and one of the staff told us that we had to be behind this line of caution tape, but when I bent down to go under the tape, my three balloons got caught, and I was stuck. I think other people were shooting at me.
Shoot! My balloon's stuck!
But one of the workers saw my helpless self and decided to free me from his trap, and surprisingly, none of my balloons popped.
We're in that way. They're in there.
I think I got my balloon.
No, you're good.
What the frick?
Are these things made out of metal? Casper and Lincoln unfortunately weren't as lucky. All their balloons bit the dust. Our team and What's Inside moved into a bunker. Anthony had one balloon left, Jaden had two, and I still had all three of mine. I got hit in the head, back, had contusions, and fractured my neck, but that's not important. The only thing that's important is that I still had all three of my balloons.
Oh, phew, someone else. We found out what was inside What's Inside's last balloon. It was helium and shame. He was standing in the bunker with us. Any one of our balloons could have been popped. But death picked him. Our lime green brethren were out. Look what's inside my hands. They're bullets. I want you to have them. And also, what's inside my heart is my faith in you guys. Avenge me. We had gotten shot at a bunch of times, yet somehow we were still in the game. The amount of teams that were left were getting small. Someone was shooting at us from our old hiding spot, and Anthony knew that there was an opening on the side he could use for a surprise attack. So Anthony stealthily walked out of the bunker and flanked the other team. And at that moment, I thought of how cool it was that someone I'd been watching for 10 years was one of my teammates. I remember voting for what food he was going to use back in Food Battle 2009? He's one of the pioneers of YouTube. He inspired countless young creators like me to start making videos. Did you know in Jake Paul's book, You Gotta Want It, Jake actually credits Smosh for inspiring him and his brother to make videos as well? Anthony!
I got him.
Was that the person who killed all of us in the training round?
Yeah, I forgot this isn't a video game, and when you shoot someone's last balloon, they can still shoot you before they realize they're out. Man, this whole balloon system seems kind of flawed. You have to keep asking people, do I still have balloons? Because you can't see how many balloons you have yourself, and there's no way of telling if you're in or out.
Anthony, take one of my balloons.
Shut up. You have to win this for us. For Team 66% Vegan. No. Team 50% Vegan.
Ugh. Only Jaden and I were left. The map was incredibly small at this point, and we were hiding behind this box and water cooler thing sticking up. Alex Ernst, who I'm a big fan of, by the way, turned the corner and I shot his last balloon. That didn't make it in the final video, so none of you would have known that.
Is that Alex?
But then, I ran out of ammo.
I'm out now. Oh, no.
Jaden didn't have any extra on her, so I couldn't do anything. We were getting shot at, and I had nothing to fight back with. I thought...
Jaden, I might have to. I might have to find a... go find a gun somewhere.
Well, if he was the last one, then if he charged him, then...
Alex tried to charge me, and he lost.
Ah! Okay, so they are poppable. I'm surprised they made it this far. But then something horrible happened. Jaden said...
I'm out.
Me too.
And with that... it was over.
Wait,
what do we do?
I don't know.
How are we going to pop other people's balloons without BBs? Well, this looks like it's it, Jaden. It's over. Why are we still here? Just to suffer? Every night I can feel my leg. And my arm. Even my fingers. The body I've lost. The comrades I've lost. Won't stop hurting. It's like they're all still there. You feel it too, don't you? I'm gonna make them pay.
I got him!
You got him! You got him?
Oh! Did we... is that it?
That's it.
Oh my god!
Did we do it?
Jaden wanted me to tell you that it sounds like she's crying here, but she wasn't crying, because she doesn't cry. And then the second game happened, but that no one cares about that one. And that's how Team 66% Vegan won $100,000. Splitting it three ways, we each got $33,333.33. But then we had one penny left, so we decided to donate it to charity. Okay, but for real, I do plan on doing something with the prize money, but that is another story for another time. Because this video is getting way too long, and I just want to be done with it. Actually, can you leave some suggestions about what I should do? Because I'm not entirely sure what I should do. As some of you may know, Jaden has already made a video about the Scribble Showdown tour me, her, Domix, Ross, and Aaron went on in 2019. But we toured again, baby, last November! We were scheduled to go earlier, but then something came up. For this round of touring, we did more than double the amount of shows than last time, so that means this video will be twice as good as Jaden's. So, touring during a global pandemic was a lot of fun. Anytime we had a day off, everyone on the crew had to take a rapid test, and people coming to the shows needed a proof of vaccine to get inside, and worst of all, we weren't able to say hi to people after the show. I know a lot of people waited outside in the cold for us to come out, only to see us at a distance load ourselves into the bus in our PJs, going, "Sorry! We're not allowed! We have to stay in our bubble!" Before the tour even started, we had a big problem. Domix couldn't get his Canadian visa approved to come work in the US, so he was unable to tour with us. But luckily, we found a sub for Dom, someone who loved maple syrup just as much as Dom and was willing to drop everything and tour with us for a whole month, Emily from the channel Emerichu. And she killed it on stage, like straight up murder. She was super funny, artistic, and she drew these awesome pictures of all of us and just... I'm not crying, shut up! When Ross met Emily, the very first thing he said to her was, "Hello, touring's going to be so fun. Just don't sleep the wrong way on the bus, because if it crashes, you'll break your neck and die painfully. Also, you're not allowed to poop on the bus." I would know. Fortunately, no one pooped or broke their neck during the whole tour. And I still haven't pooped. Your body adapts to crazy things. During the last tour, Ross couldn't control his bowels, but this time he couldn't control his brain. He had what he describes as intense, debilitating nightmares that felt like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack was added to the experience. And if you want to hear more about what Ross's twisted mind thought up of when he was unconscious, then go check out the video he made on his channel. But not now, because I'm talking. So, on this tour, I wanted to be better at taking photos. You know, the reason I don't have a vlogging channel is because I forget to film anything that happens on my trips. And as I was taking a photo of a venue, I found out that my phone could do something called Photosphere. Photospheres are full 360-degree photos that show you everything at every angle. Here's a picture of the venue, and here's what the ground looked like. They're the superior way of taking photos. I took a photosphere of every venue. Hey, you know what else is round and cool? That's a great question. It's the type of question we got asked in our VIP Q&A panel. Before every show, the five of us would go out and do a Q&A panel for the people who bought VIP tickets. And 93.75% of the Q&As were absolutely fine. One time, someone asked a question that was directed at their fiancé, and it was, "Will you marry me?" Oh, I'm gonna take a photosphere of this. Hold on, you'll need to stay still for like 2 minutes. I wish that question was directed at me. I would have loved to kiss someone on tour. Anyways, one of the cues we got was a little odd. I'm not gonna tell you which show this was at, but it was in Florida, because of course it was. There was one guy in the audience wearing a suit who was reaching his hand so high up that his butt was out of his chair and he was visibly shaking with excitement. So given how urgent this guy was being, Aaron called on him, but now we know not to call on those types of people. You in the suit. The guy stands up screaming, "Yes! Thank you!" And he goes on a long-winded explanation saying, "Look, I'm 26 years old, I'm not getting any younger, I want to do what you do!" Okay. What's your question? My question is that I want to make a bet with all of you that in 1 year I'm going to be up on stage with you performing at Scribble Showdown! I wanted to say, "I bet $1 million because we're not holding auditions." But instead, I said, "I love your enthusiasm. That's great. But don't quantify your success into a certain time frame, because that's only going to set yourself up for failure. Especially on the internet, growing an audience takes time and luck. Nothing is ever guaranteed." And we told him good luck and started answering other cues. And then at the end of the Q&A, as we were walking off stage, the guy screamed out, "See you in a year!" And that made me upset because he didn't listen to anything I just said. To his credit, he'll definitely be remembered. Not in the way he wants to, but remembered. And he's coming on tour with us next year, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. Another fun fan interaction that happened was in the freezing state of Chicago. We arrived in Chicago a day early, so me and Emily decided to walk to The Bean. Now, I have been told that The Bean is not called The Bean, and the artist actually wants it to be called something else. So as we walked up to The Bean, I kept chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." I took some photospheres, and as we started to leave, we passed another group who were chanting, "It's The Bean! It's The Bean!" And I thought, wow, those guys are annoying. But then they made eye contact with me through the bean's reflection and were like, "Oh my god, are you James?" And I said, "Who?" And then someone saw Emily and said, "Oh my god, it's Jaden!" And I started laughing, and I pointed to my Scribble Showdown jacket. "No, no, no, it's this one, not this one, this one." But I don't think they understood, because when we were taking a group photo, one of them said, "Jaden should go in front." And I said, "Yeah, Jaden, come over here." So on the last tour, Aaron had just gotten into Magic the Gathering, which is a card game I've been playing longer than him. Back then, I had to explain some of the rules and show him the pro gamer strats, but during 2019 to 2021, Aaron got really into Magic. He knows the name of every single card and what it does. Like, I'll pull a card from a pack and he'll be like, "Oh, nice, Branching Evolution. That's like a worse doubling season. But you could combo it with the Colossal Dreadmaw and the Truffle Mixer. No, the Truffle Mater and get Gary out in turn 5. Gary's what the community calls the Gray Apostle." What? At one of the venues we stayed at, I noticed that there was a random 2 of diamonds glued to the ceiling. So I says to Aaron, "Hey Aaron, say a card, any card."
7 of clubs.
No, lower.
3 of clubs.
Lower.
2 of clubs.
Okay, now change the suit.
2 of diamonds.
Now, you chose that card, right?
Okay.
Look up. What? But then Aaron bought a deck of playing cards and performed a card trick that forced someone to pick the 2 of diamonds, and then Aaron would tell them to look up saying, "Is that your card?" What? And because of that, Aaron started to learn other card tricks and would try them out on people. So, I don't want to take any credit for Aaron's hobbies, but I totally got him into Magic, and I got him into Magic. While we were on tour, we got invited to be a part of Jacksepticeye's hashtag ThankMiss livestream that was raising money to build homeless shelters. And on stream, Aaron had this crazy idea that if we reached our goal, he would kiss one of us. And then we reached our goal, and then nothing notable happened. If this show sounds like a lot of fun, and you want to come see all of us play drawing games live, and you live in Europe, then great news! We have a Europe tour scheduled for April! Get your tickets on the Scribble Showdown website, and next time we plan on touring in the States again, I'll let you know. But for now, thank you everyone who came to a show, unless you live in Brooklyn. Thank you all for watching, and thank you everyone on the Real Good Touring team who babysat us for a month and made the show possible. Touring with you was a blast. And now, I'm going back to sleep on my tour bus coffin, facing the correct way while repressing my urge to poop. And golly, I sure do hope I don't get any nightmares. Right, bunk buddy Ross? Ross?
I haven't slept in 11 days.
All right, James. Are you ready for this show?
Better got that. I was going to say, that's only happening one time.
Down! I'm crazy! Ah! Merry Christmas!
Yeah, that's right, I said it.
What are you gonna do about it, atheists?
Christmas carols are an integral part of creating the Christmas atmosphere. Okay, yes, I agree, it's annoying when radio stations play Christmas music directly after Halloween, but when December finally rolls around and Michael Bublé emerges from his cave, magic fills the air. And if you work in retail, you've probably already listened to every single Christmas song ever created. After many hours of research, I have found that there's 2 types of Christmas music. On one side, you have songs about Santa Claus, and on the other side, you have songs about Jesus. Isn't it funny that Santa is an anagram for Satan? Just something to think about. Christmas is easily the most sung about holiday. Halloween isn't even in a close second, but it's also the most diverse genre of music out there. You have songs like Away in a Manger and Silent Night that can put anyone to sleep, but under the same umbrella, you have Santa Baby and Christmas Don't Be Late by Alvin and the Chipmunks. I love Christmas carols, okay? It's one of the few good things left in this world that brings a smile to my face. But now I want to talk about the Christmas carols that don't make a lot of sense. Starting with the song Silent Night. Okay, sure, I've never given birth before, but I don't know if all is calm, all is bright is a good way to describe the process of childbirth. I get that it was Jesus and he's perfect, okay? But he's still a baby. Mary still had to go into labor. I don't know, I see all these nativity scenes with Jesus being the center of attention and Mary just off to the side with everyone else. But she just gave birth, you guys! Someone needs to build Mary her own manger to lay down in. Also, sleep in heavenly peace? Yeah, you're not gonna do that ever again. So the song Last Christmas is about when Taylor Swift gave someone her heart for Christmas, but then on December 26th they re-gifted it to someone else, so then the very next year she gave it to someone special. I don't know what the moral of that song is, but it could have been about any holiday. They just happened to break up the day after Christmas. Last Earth Day, I gave you my heart. See, that still works. Walking in a winter wonderland? I have a question. Who is Parson Brown? Why is the first thing he says when he comes to life, "Hey, are you kids married?" No, man. But you can do the job when you're in town, if you know what I'm saying. Oh, Parson is a priest. He was asking, "Are you married? Because I'm a priest. I can marry you two. That's my job." Ah. Carol of the Bells? Now, I love this song, But honestly, I don't see how this counts as Christmas music. Have a holly jolly Christmas? What do you mean by kiss her once for me? Are you cheating on me? Baby, it's cold outside. Okay, now this one is extremely problematic. Why don't they just put a coat on? All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth, a hippopotamus, and you! I would not want to meet the person who made this Christmas list. Just saying. I'm getting nothing for Christmas. How did I not know about this song until just now? Alright, how many Christmas songs can say they got a movie based off of them? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? Yeah, it's a classic. Frosty the Snowman? Yeah, good choice. The Little Drummer Boy got a movie? Okay, fine, yeah, I'll count that. I think you're all missing the real classical Christmas song. Grandma got run over by a reindeer. In the song, it's canon that Grandma died, but at least in the movie, Grandma lived. She just got kidnapped by Santa because he was trying to hide the evidence. You know, no witnesses. I hope they don't make a Baby It's Cold Outside movie. Just an hour and a half of people not putting on jackets. Anyways, I have to keep this video extremely short if I want to get it out by Christmas. I hope you all have a good holiday, and if you don't celebrate Christmas, you're missing out on some great carols and questionable morals. Thanks for watching. I'm going to be taking some time off to celebrate Christmas with my family. Remember to buy that merch, and as always, wear your seatbelt.
And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92.
I'm 93. Do I still count?
No, Grandpa, we hate you. Just so you know, that gag was based off a comic I made back in 2014. So I wanted to make a Christmas video, but I didn't know what to talk about, so we're just gonna sit here and roast marshmallows by this PNG of a fire. Do you guys know about that soccer game that happened in the middle of World War I on Christmas Day? And it was between two opposing sides, the Allies and the Central Powers? I'm not making this up. So, German and British troops were in the trenches, you know, fighting for their lives. They were in the middle of a war, after all. And on Christmas Eve, German troops started singing Christmas carols. Then the British troops responded singing their own Christmas carols. Then one thing led to another, and on Christmas Day, they started playing soccer. Well, the British troops would have called it football, and the German troops would have called it football. But I'm calling it soccer. Yeah, I know I'm a heretic. I don't think anything like that has happened in a war ever. Except for that one time in the Revolutionary War when everyone stopped fighting because the new Super Smash Brothers just came out. Merry feet! Merry feet! Tis not Falco! Wamba with combination!
Oh!
Where art thou? Okay, that was obviously a joke. Melee didn't come out for at least, like, another year. Stupid. Anyway, what I'm wondering is, do you think anyone during that game felt a little bit awkward? So, how's the war? Oh, you're fearing for your life? Well, that's good. That means we're doing a good job. Do you think whoever won the game of soccer bragged to the other team?
Ha ha! Yes! First we beat you at football, next, the world.
Ah, dang it, my marshmallow burned. Does the story of Rudolph count as a fable? What would the moral of Rudolph be? I think it would be, being different from society will be punished unless it's exploitable. Okay, I stole that quote from something I saw on the subreddit, I'm 14 and this is deep. How come no one sings any songs about any of the other reindeer? Rudolph saved Christmas once, and like, he didn't do it alone. Just because he could see through the snow, which, by the way, wouldn't have been useful in Arizona, didn't mean he carried Santa's sleigh all by himself. But no, just because you were bullied as a kid, you get your own song. Well, enough about you going down in history, Rudolph. I'm gonna make my own song about Prancer. Do-do-do. Prancer, the normal-nosed reindeer, had a very normal nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, yep, that's a nose. All of the other reindeer respected him for meeting the expectations of what a normal reindeer should be like. They always let little Prancer play on his reindeer bike. Okay, I'll stop. What if the reason Rudolph had a shiny nose was because Rudolph's mom had an affair with a clown? That was based off a comic I made in 2014. Why did the three wise men bring baby Jesus gold, Frankenstein, and myrrh? What kind of baby would want that? Okay, that was also based off a comic I made in 2014. Man, 2014 was just my year. Please read my comics. You know what? I'm not done talking about Rudolph. You guys have all seen the stop-motion movie they made about him in the 60s, right? You know, about the elf who wants to be a dentist. So who wouldn't?
Yeah!
weren't you at all practice?
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Yukon Cornelius sacrifices himself to kill the abominable snowman, and he saves all of his friends, and also indirectly saves Christmas, but whatever, he doesn't get a song. But then later in the movie, he just walks through the front door, and everyone's wondering how he survived, and Rudolph even says,
But you went over the side of a cliff!
And then Yukon tells everyone the answer,
Didn't I ever tell you about bumbos?
Bumbos bounce! And then everyone just laughs it off like it was a hilarious joke and doesn't ask him any more questions. Even as a kid, I thought that was a stupid explanation. What does that mean, bumbos bounce? Like, did you two fall off the cliff, and then when you hit the bottom, just trampoline yourself all the way back up? Oh wait, no, I think I know what it means. It means the writers didn't want to kill off a character, so they just came up with a plot device to make him live. You know, because you can't have death in a kid's movie! No one dies. Not even the bad guy dies. How does Santa deliver to houses without chimneys? I think Tim Allen tried to explain it once. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this video. I kept it short so that way I have more time to spend Christmas with my family, and it also gives me more time to wrap presents. Because, you know, I'm just terrible at rapping. You know how when people get into a new relationship, they go through a honeymoon phase? Well, me and my girlfriend went through a is the person I'm dating a deranged murderer phase. When she first came over to my house, she thought my Nintendo figure collection was something only a psychopath would have. And she's right. When you've been living alone for so long, sometimes you just need to buy friends and put them on display. And sometimes you do this by turning people into lampshades or chairs. Luckily, I just collect hunky reptile figures. Gif doesn't actually think I'm a psychopath anymore, which is good, you know, because I don't want anyone to know the truth. However, early on in our relationship, there were some things I did that she didn't like. Like one time I was unloading the dishwasher and I was putting away the knives and Gif looked at me all concerned and I asked, "What's the matter, huh? Huh?" I don't know what made her run to the other side of the room like that when I could clearly just throw the knife at her. Yeah, she's kind of stupid. But she definitely got her point across that she didn't like me holding multiple knives and told me to cut it out. But I didn't know if she was a psychopath either though, because there are definitely some things about her that made me question her sanity. Like how she owns a $2,000 animal mascot costume, but she hates sports. That's weird. One time when I was over at her apartment, I was looking through her freezer, assuming she had bagel bites, and I asked, "Hey babe, where's all the bagel bites?" And there was this plastic grocery bag in there, and she tells me, No, don't look in there! We don't have any bagel bites, you ate them all, remember? But in my mind, all I'm thinking is, hold on. What the frick does this chick have in her freezer that she doesn't want me to see? A freezer is not a place where you tell someone, don't look in there. You say that about underwear drawers and toilets. That's it. I don't know what we did for the next 10 minutes, because all I was thinking about was how many severed hands were in Gif's freezer. But then I thought, okay, maybe I'm overreacting. I optimistically asked, "Hey, babe, are you, perhaps keeping a surprise for me in the freezer? Like a birthday cake? My birthday's not for another 5 months, but that's the only thing I can think a person would hide in a freezer that wouldn't make them a psychopath." And she said, "Nope."
So what's in there?
Don't worry about it. Do you not see how this looks? If the doors weren't locked, I would have been out of there. I wasn't about to lose sleep over this, so I held up the knife I had from the previous joke and said, "What's in the freezer?" And she went, "It's a dead snake." You had a dead snake next to the bagel bits! So fun fact about my GIF, she owns 8 snakes. Apparently she used to own 9. I've learned that snakes are a very low maintenance pet. You only have to feed them once every 3 years, and if you cut them in half, they turn into 2 snakes. Yeah, so I have no clue how one of her snakes could have died. And another fun fact, snakes lack the part of the brain that feels love. They're physically incapable of showing affection. So your pet hognose would sell your soul to Snake Satan for 1 dead mouse. So she already has 8 pets that don't love her, and potentially her boyfriend too if she doesn't get rid of that freezer snake. At least my reptiles aren't dead in a freezer. I immediately start asking questions. Why do you have a dead snake in your freezer? How many other dead animals are in your freezer? What the heck's wrong with you? And she said, "I wanted to get him taxidermied, but the person I wanted to have do it was busy. Also, there's dead rats in there for my snakes." Oh, that explains why the bagel bites tasted so funny. What's extremely gross is that the snake is still in there to this day. I don't know how long the snake was in there before, but it's been well over a year since that incident. It's honestly great, though, because now she can never complain about the state of my refrigerator. I'll have potatoes that are sprouting more potatoes, grapes that are getting me tipsy, and if she points any of it out, I just respond with, "Oh, you think my refrigerator's disgusting? Yeah, Medusa? Uh-huh." One time she said, "Ah, my fridge smells terrible and I don't know why." "Really? You can't think of a single reason?" She said, "No, I said the fridge smells bad, not the freezer." I said, "I will flush your snake down the toilet and give you a swirly." Now that's the sign of true love, kids. But for all I know, she could totally still have severed hands in there. After dealing with the snakesicle situation, there's some other things I've learned from being in a relationship. Apparently, there are rules and etiquettes when eating food, and my girlfriend sure does love and enforce those rules. I was taught, don't put your elbows on the table, close your mouth when you're chewing unless you want to talk to someone, and make sure you eat something green every once in a while. But according to her, there's more than that. Like, did you know that bagel bites aren't a part of a balanced diet? We were at a restaurant one time, pre-COVID, and when we got our food, Gif took a napkin and put it on her lap and told me to do that as well because you're supposed to do that in a society. I looked around the restaurant and said, "But no one else has a napkin on their laps." And she said, "That's because you wanted to eat at a Denny's." I didn't know why she was such a stickler for table manners until I went to her family's place for Thanksgiving and I stepped inside and saw two sets of staircases in their house. And it all made sense. Oh, they're fancy and collect staircases. Going to my girlfriend's home for Thanksgiving was the first time I met a partner's parents, and I tried really, really hard to get them to like me. Because I'm kissing their firstborn child. I'm in the house, dad's watching sports. I love sports, I lied. Mom's working on a puzzle. I love puzzles. They used to call me the puzzle king in high school. Her brother's playing Mario Odyssey. I love Mario. Oh, wait, I don't have to impress you. You suck at this game. In an effort to get them to like me more, I brought a gift for Gif's family. I got them a little baby cactus because it's small and prickly and doesn't like to be touched. Just like her. Ooh, ow, babe. No, babe. It was a joke. It was a joke, babe. I'm sorry. Gif's Thanksgiving meal was the polar opposite of my family's Thanksgiving. My family does Thanksgiving with two other families, and they all come together with mashed potatoes, and everyone gets in a line with paper plates, and we all have one big mashed potato potluck. Then I sit at the kids' table to avoid talking about politics. Gif's family used real plates and had candles, and everyone puts a napkin on their lap. I felt like Shrek at Fiona's castle. They had three forks of various sizes, but I still wanted them to like me, so I wasn't about to point out that it made no sense to use three different forks to eat a meal. This must be why Gif is so afraid of knives. All these cutlery options are bringing up childhood traumas of going up all the stairs. But Gif's family was so fancy that I actually didn't even meet them on Thanksgiving. My memory just filled in that we were having a Thanksgiving meal. Gif read this script and was like, "You know you didn't meet them on Thanksgiving, right? That was just a regular Tuesday brunch. That wasn't even a meal to be thankful for? Why'd we talk about politics so much?" One of the big political debates we have is that Gif tells me I wear dad socks. But I don't think she understands my genius. You see, if I buy and wear the same pair of socks for the rest of my life, I'll never have to worry about matching socks ever again. So I've already picked out the socks that I'm going to be wearing at my funeral. And as we were wrapping up our non-thankful meal, I got up from the table, and Gif's dad said, "Hey, I have those socks." So I guess she's right about some things. And her dad totally likes me now. In the end, as long as I make Gif happy, then I know her parents will like me, no matter what socks I wear. And as long as you're with someone who makes you a happier person, then they're a good partner too. Even if they refuse to throw away the dead snake they've had in their freezer for almost 3 years.
Welcome to the Warrior Cat Wing of the Animation History Museum. I will be guiding your tour today. I hope you have nothing else planned.
Warrior Cats is a book series that follows a society of feral cats who live in these groups that are kind of a mix between a gang and a cult. While they are considered kids' books, I will say Warrior Cats is less fun time happy cat adventures and more Watership Down. We won't be getting too graphic here, but a lot of the cats don't make it. Now, you might be wondering why these books have their own dedicated wing in the Animation History Museum. These are letters, not pictures, stupid. Well, you see, this fan base has the most animated fan base ever. Yes, even more than that one you really like. People love to draw these cats. Coming up is one of my favorite pieces. The artist's use of anime hair and Windows Movie Maker transitions perfectly encapsulates that indescribable era of 2009. And I especially love the artist's bold choice of including their OC into this piece, really calling to the essence of the human experience and that desire to rescue a villain who is also your comfort character. Something you need to understand is that kids who are now adults have been drawing these cats for quite some time. We have records of kids drawing these cats all the way back in 2004. And if you were a Warrior Cat fan during the 2008 housing market crash, then you were eating extremely well, not with food, but with edgy cat animations drawn entirely by a mouse. Fans were making anime openings, AMVs, and graphic depictions of some of the more watership down moments in the series. I'm blurring these out because mutilated cats bum me out. And just like the books that are still coming out, the Warriors never stopped drawing. I don't want to sound dramatic, but you could spend the rest of your life watching nothing but Warrior Cat fan animations and still not have seen them all. I actually haven't done the math on that yet, but trust me, there's a lot. Is this playlist still going? I have been fully aware of the vast quantity of Warrior Cat fan animations for quite some time. Heck, I've even hired some of them. But I've never been able to truly enjoy a Warrior Cat fan animation, as I've never read these books growing up, because all the kids in my class who did pretended to be the cats during recess and would hiss at me whenever I tried talking to them, which even back then I was like, okay, this is a little weird, guys. But I regret not reading these books growing up, because now I'm left with all these unanswered questions. Why are so many people drawn to drawing these fictional cats? What are these feelings stirring in my bosom as I watch these? And why do the art styles change so much? As we move down the Warrior Cat fan animation timeline, around 2012 is when the Warriors really begin to specialize in multi-animator projects. Basically, there were so many people willing to draw these cats that a large group of them all worked together, each animating a different segment of a video, and then when everyone's segment gets done in 14 months, the finished segments get stitched together into one complete video. I guarantee you've seen at least one of these group reanimator projects before, and you might have the Warriors to thank for that. I don't know who started the trend. Maps work out great for everyone, because now you and 40 of your animation buddies only have to animate a few seconds of a cat fight, and we get to watch a super engaging music video with changing art styles every 6 seconds. I really have to commend everyone who puts these projects together, especially the ones that were done before messaging apps like Discord even existed. But what I find extremely impressive is that everyone who signs up for these projects are doing so simply for exposure. No one involved expects any type of monetary compensation, and Warrior maps are very often made to copyrighted music, meaning no one's making money off these projects anyways. I can only imagine what musicians must go through when their manager tells them, "You're not gonna believe this! Someone just made a fan-animated music video of your song on YouTube!" And then the artist goes to watch it, and they just see a bunch of cartoon cats fighting each other. Violently. Can I tell you a quick story time? Once I wandered into a Barnes & Noble and thought, I wonder if they have any physical copies of Warrior Cats, because that is something I am willing to buy. So I went to the young adult section, looked under W, and found nothing. They didn't have any. Well, that's too bad, I thought. I mean, between the main books, graphic novels, and super editions, there's only over 100 different books, with new ones still being written to this day, but I guess this BNN doesn't have any. Oh well. But then, I had the disturbing realization that I might be looking in the wrong place. I was looking in the young adult section. I needed to extend my search to the kids' corner, spelled with a Z. So, I gingerly walked from the kid book section to the little kid book section, trying to find the book I was currently reading. And there, next to the barn built into the wall and the blocks, were the Warriors. I'm not going to judge you on whatever books you like to read, because I live in a glass house. If I was ever going to understand what made people so drawn to drawing these violent feral kitty cats,
then I would have to start reading these. So, whether you never read these books but are curious to know why so many people are drawing the characters, or maybe you did read these books a long time ago and want a refresher from the perspective of an adult who didn't grow up with them,
Either way, get your favorite cat treat and knock something off a counter as we dive paws first into the wild and wonderful world of Warrior Cats. So, spoiler warning for Warrior Cats. Our main protagonist is Rusty, a handsome ginger Tom. Those are not my words. That is how he's described in the character description at the front of the book. Ignore that he's called Firepaw right now. Firepaw and Rusty are the same cat. It'll make sense in a little bit. Rusty is a regular house cat living with people, or as he would call them, two legs. You see, cats have some pretty unique slurs for everyday normal human things. This isn't a car driving on a road. It's a monster on the Thunderpath. Personally, I love it when books explain everyday mundane human things from, like, a non-human perspective. Like, yeah, a car would be a monster to a cat. It merges without using a turn signal. Now, our main cat, Rusty, grows tired of his soft kitty pet life and thinks maybe living in the forest directly behind his backyard would sorta kinda be cool. But he's not ready for a big life change just yet. But then one day, Rusty's only friend in the entire world named Smudge, he tells Rusty, "Hey, did you know when our owners take us to the vet, they chop our guys off?" Fellas, would you spend the rest of your life surviving in the woods if it meant you got to keep both of your dudes? I would. So, like many other unneutered male cats, Rusty abandons his soft kitty pet life and sets out to start a new, wild and free life in the forest directly behind his backyard. It turns out there's a whole society of wild feral kitty cats living in the forest behind Rusty's backyard, and they've divided themselves into four distinct groups, or clans. The first clan we're going to be looking at is Thunder Clan. This is the clan our protagonists belong to and where most of the story takes place. These cats are the moral, compassionate, brave ones. Gryffindor. The next clan is Shadow Clan. These are the edgy, evil cats. Slytherin. Sure, there's evil cats in every clan, but a lot of them are from Shadow Clan, especially in Season 1. Because they have Shadow in the name, I always imagined every cat here was just a black Halloween cat. The next clan is River Clan. Their main thing is, they swim. I wouldn't call them Ravenclaw because they're not smart. They're more of a water tribe. And the next clan is Wind Clan, but you don't need to worry, they're Hufflepuffs, so. Cats from different clans hate each other and are super territorial. Don't even think about falling in love and starting a family with a cat from a different clan. That is so unaccepted, it happens constantly. And those are the four clans in the forest. However, there's one clan not in the forest we need to talk about called Star Clan. Ooh. Did you know cats have their own religion? Your childhood cat isn't going to be kicking it with you in boring old two-leg heaven. They're going to be sharing tongues with their ancestors in Star Clan. Sharing tongues is like when cats lick each other, like, you know, normal cat behavior. But whenever I read sharing tongues, I always thought they were like French kissing or something. Star Clan is basically warrior cat heaven. And it's so much more than a character looking up at the night sky and seeing their deceased dad in the clouds. Instead, Star Clan plays a much bigger role in the books, and we get to frequently visit and see what wacky antics the cat angels get up to. So even though there is a lot of death in Warrior Cats, just because a cat dies doesn't mean it's the last we'll ever see of them. They'll just be in their angel form from now on. And those are the five clans you need to know about. It's just those four main ones and Warrior Cat Heaven. There's not going to be, like, a secret sixth clan or anything. Now, normally, forest cats are super big on cat purity and would never allow this random outsider into their clan. But you see, the leader of Thunder Clan, named Blue Star, she had a pretty good reason to allow this handsome ginger Tom into the clan. Blue Star, you know, kinda thought he was the chosen one.
and he canonically still had both of his guys. So, prophecies play a very big role in the wild world of warrior cats. And the first prophecy we hear about is fire alone will save the clan. So knowing that fire alone will save the clan, Blue Star sees this handsome Ginger Tom just wandering through the forest and officially accepts him into ThunderClan, bestowing him the new name Fire Paw. See, that's why the front of the book called him Fire Paw, remember? Now it's making sense. So completely remove the name Rusty from your brain. That's never coming back. Everyone who's read these books knows this cat as Fire Paw. He's got a paw of fire. By this point, you've probably noticed a pretty unique formula to some of these cat names. Blue Star? Fire Paw? Let's take a look at some of these other characters, shall we? Let's see, we got Ashfur, Mousefur, Leopardfur, Frostfur, Russetfur, Oakfur, Brackenfur, Sootfur, Ashfur again? Okay, what the fur is going on? What's with all these war... If you are not privy to the naming convention of these warrior cat characters, the nomenclature of these cat names follows a simple two-part system. Every cat's name is made up of any of these prefixes and any of these suffixes. Can you see that? Graypaw, White Storm, Blue Star. Every name is like this. Mountain Dew is a valid warrior cat name. Now, I already knew about these ridiculous double-syllable names going into the series, and I was legitimately worried it would be impossible for me to keep track and remember all of these cat names. But do you want to know something I didn't know going into this series? Their name changes. When I got to the first name-changing ceremony, I threw the book down thinking, I'm not smart enough to understand the complexities of warrior cats. I should just give up. But then I thought, no. If a 9-year-old child in 2008 can remember all these ridiculous cat names, then so can I. And then I got to one of the many kit birthing scenes, and all the cats would go, oh boy, more warriors for ThunderClan. Everyone welcome Ice Kit and Fox Kit. And I would go...
I hope Ice Kit and Fox Kit die.
But I must say, once you really get into this series, remembering all the different cat names isn't that big of an issue. First of all, sometimes the cat's name will just be a short description of what they physically look like, ergo make them easier to remember. What do you think Running Nose looks like? What do you think Spider Legs looks like? I don't know what Mouse Fur looks like, but in my head, she's always wearing like a mouse costume. And just everyone, no one addresses it. They're just like, that's mouse fur. What's really bad is that there's like mouse fur and then mouse kit, like in the same scene. And it's like, what are we doing here, Aaron? And as strange as these names sound, there's actually a methodology to them that correlates to what rank a cat is. Kittens will always have the suffix kit. You read the sentence, Ice Kit and Fox Kit were playing in the hollow. You don't have to worry about them. They don't matter. Apprentices will always have the suffix paw, because they're apprentices. Fire paw and gray paw are both apprentices. And anything above them is when the warrior names get a little more creative and don't have a set suffix, except for the very top, the leaders, which always have the name star. Which means you have to be careful reading the wiki, because sometimes learning a cat's up-to-date name is a spoiler. Now, instead of having to remember Gray Stripe, Blue Star, White Storm, all you really have to remember is Gray, Blue, White. And while we're looking at the clan hierarchy, can I just talk about medicine cats real quick? Medicine cats are responsible for healing the sick and injured clanmates, and they don't use, like, medicine. All of their healing comes from herbs found locally in the forest, but I always felt like the books were stretching some of the healing properties they claimed these herbs possessed. Okay, the cats are constantly getting into fights, so they're getting scratches, and the med cats would put cobwebs over wounds. Okay, I can sort of see that working as like a natural band-aid. But then during one of the many kit birthing scenes, the med cats would be like, oh no! Give her a poppy seed to calm her down! And I was always like, a singular poppy seed? Like, from a bagel? At least give her, like, a couple.
So back in the forest, Rusty meets all the other apprentices in ThunderClan. and one apparentis confides in our hero some terrible news. He secretly witnessed this other cat named Tiger Claw murder another cat in his own clan.
Tiger Claw is here, and he murdered the cat here, the deputy, because deputies of a clan are next in line to be leader, so he couldn't just murder the leader, he has to murder the deputy so he could be deputy, and then he can murder the leader. Do you understand? Good. Okay, cool.
I just want to point out that I got this corkboard off Facebook Marketplace, and the pictures did not show how badly sun-damaged it was.
So immediately, this series sets up Tiger Claw as the main bad guy of the story, that he's willing to murder cats in his own clan to become leader. And getting to become the leader of a clan is a very enticing idea to Tiger Claw, because leaders get blessed by Star Clan with 9 lives. Every other cat only gets 1 life, but the leaders get to die 8 extra times.
And I really like this plot device because as the series goes on, we get to keep track of how many times a leader loses a life, and the suspense builds and builds as we get closer to that final one. Now, our heroes kind of do everything in their power not to tell anyone that Tiger Claw is the bad guy. Like, there's seriously a scene where Firepaw gets a one-on-one training session with Blue Star, and he's like, I should probably tell the leader of my clan about the broad-shoulder backstabbing murderer named Tiger Claw in the clan. But then Blue Star's like, fight me! And then he gets caught up in the fighting, and then he just forgets to tell her. Okay. So just like the other characters, we're gonna keep the thought of Tiger Claw being the main bad guy in the back of our mind, because we got more important stuff to worry about. Shadow Clan just attacked Thunder Clan for no reason.
Oh, fuck!
And they end up killing Firepaw's secret crush, who he barely talked to and was way older than him and practiced celibacy.
The Thundercats and Shadowcats face off in a big epic battle, and eventually the heroic Thundercats defeat the evil Shadowcats.
And as the first episode comes to a close, Blue Star promotes Firepaw to the warrior class.
Firepaw's new warrior name is Fire Heart.
Alright, that's now 2 times our protagonist has changed names in 1 book.
Now that Fireheart is officially a warrior, I would like to take a quick palate-cleansing break from the wild world of Warrior Cats, because I would feel extremely remiss if I didn't share with you all a rather humorous story time about an instance where I, too, was trying to become a warrior.
So when I was deep into reading these books, I went to this boxing gym because I was training for nothing, apparently. And on my drive to said boxing gym, I would listen to the Warriors. It helped me get into the right headspace, I guess. Now, the way the parking lot at this gym worked was that sometimes you'd park your car in front of another car, and then you would give your keys to the receptionist guy at the front, and he would move your car for you. Totally fine, totally cool, except for the one time I made the mistake of leaving my phone in the car, a phone that would auto-connect and immediately play the last thing I was listening to if said car were to turn on. At any given moment, I'd like to think my social interaction skills are at a 7 out of 10. Pretty good, but still room for improvement. In the middle of a boxing class, I'm covered in sweat, I got stink lines coming off me, now I'm at a 6 out of 10. But when the boxing gym receptionist comes up to me and says, hey man, you left your phone in your car. By the way, love the book you're reading. Whoosh! Now I'm at a 0. I've talked to this receptionist before, and he knew I did YouTube, so I tried desperately to explain myself. Oh, you know, I'm gonna make a video about it. Plus, I wanted to read more this year. And then he asks, are you gonna mention
the movie?
I was cut off by this. I knew there wasn't a Warrior Cats movie, but I was absolutely not going to argue about it with the boxing gym receptionist in front of a bunch of dudes punching each other. So I just went, there's a movie? And he goes, yeah, there's a movie. And the way he said, yeah, there's a movie, made it sound like I was the dumb one for not knowing about the Warrior Cats movie. And I forget exactly what I said after that, but it was probably along the lines of, could someone please punch me so I no longer have to be in this conversation? And for the whole rest of the class, I could not fathom why that guy was so positive about the existence of a movie that definitely didn't exist. Did he see someone reenact the entire book with Littlest Pet Shop Dolls and think that was a movie?
I'm sure gonna miss you, Ravenpaw. Why don't we share tons one last time?
It wasn't until I got back to my car when things started to click. When I turned my car on and connected my phone, the little dashboard screen thingy didn't say, "Now playing Warriors, The New Prophecy, Episode 5. All it said was, "Now playing Twilight." So he thinks I was reading that, and I don't know which is worse.
So, diving paws first back into the wild world of Warrior Cats, Fireheart's best bro for life, who is now named
Graystripe,
starts being a little horn cat. It's like horn dog, but it's a horn cat. He's being a little frisky boy.
You see, it all started when Graystripe accidentally fell into a river and was rescued by a cat in River Clan. And these two cats from different clans immediately hit it off. But this will just be the first example of one of the many universal truths about Warrior Cats. All it takes for two characters to fall deeply in love with each other is if they ever appear in a scene together. And that's especially true for cats from different clans. Something about betraying your whole clan is sexy, I guess. Meow.
Fireheart keeps his best bro's forbidden relationship a secret when all of a sudden,
she's pregnant? And she's having the kits now? Graystripe's gonna be a dad? Graystripe's girlfriend doesn't make it through kit birth, but luckily, her kids do. We have the boy one and the girl one. You don't have to worry about them ever again. This leaf blower is killing me. What do I do? What do I do about this leaf blower? Do I ask him to stop?
After this scene, Graystripe's forbidden relationship made a lot more sense to me. It felt rushed and contrived because this was never a love story. It was an I got the River Clan leader's daughter pregnant who then died in kit birth story. A classic tale for all children's books. This death was the first in the series that made me go, whoa, Warrior Cats don't mess around. Who kills off the pregnant girlfriend? And then Graystripe tries living in River Clan for a bit, but that ultimately falls through, so he doesn't get to live there anymore, and he never gets to see his two kids grow up. Well, his first two kids.
While Graystripe was going behind everyone's back to visit his River Clan girlfriend, Fireheart was going behind everyone's back to visit his biological sister at her Two Legs Nest. And she tells him, you know, you're making the idea of living in the forest sound totally cool and awesome. I don't want to completely uproot my life, though, so could you take one of my kids away and force him to live with you? This is Cloudtail, Fireheart's sister's son. The books never call this white cat Fireheart's nephew. They always called him his sister's kit, sister's son, or sister's firstborn.
Now, this could just be because cats are quirky with words and don't have a name to describe the relationship of your sister's son. But the more the books kept avoiding ever using the word nephew, the more I started to worry that nephew was too big of a word for this reading level. But then the books throw the word jubilant at you? You're not gonna use nephew, but jubilant's fine? You seriously gonna make me pull out a dictionary, Warrior Cat? Since Cloudtail was thrown into clan life kind of against his will, he doesn't super respect the strict set of rules all the clan cats follow. And he's an atheist. Just doesn't believe in Star Clan, like, at all. That detail never really comes up, but the books let you know that he is one. It's super important that you know the religious views of these cats, okay? Cloudtail ends up getting captured by Two Legs, and now it's up to his mother's brother to rescue him. When this scene was first introduced, I got super excited because by now, so much of the drama in this series has been cats fighting over prey, cats fighting over territory, and cats fighting over love. So when the opportunity of a rescue my sister's son heist was introduced, I was excited just for something different. Fireheart's going to have to navigate through a two-leg nest he's never been in before and describe all the mundane human things he sees from his non-human cat perspective. What is this strange hissing elephant? I love it when books do that kind of stuff. But while I was thinking of all the interesting possibilities, Fireheart just opens the front door and Cloudtail escapes. He never even goes inside. Cool. Glad you're back, Cloudtail. You're going to follow the strict set of rules, but still be an atheist? No, that's fine. Yeah, I think I saw some fresh kill we could hunt back there. Once our heroes were finally done dealing with their atheist nephew and pregnant girlfriend, they finally came to their senses and told the leader Blue Star about the murderous broad-shouldered Tiger Claw in the clan.
And it actually got to a point where I started to question if Tiger Claw really was the main bad guy.
Now, this might just be because I watch too many movies, but when something tries this hard to tell me he's the main bad guy, especially this early on in the story, I start to think, yeah, I can smell this plot twist coming from a mile away. Fireheart never had any proof Tiger Claw was evil. He was just blindly believing what this other random apprentice was saying. Tiger Claw was there when Cinderpelt got her legs run over, but we don't know for sure he caused the accident. How does a cat even orchestrate something like that? Yeah, he might be constantly giving off bad vibes, but that's just all part of the misdirection. I'm telling ya, there's enough wiggle room here for this cat to actually be the misunderstood good guy. But it turns out, no. He is evil, and he did all those evil things. Tiger Claw, what is this? Blue Star's meow is sharper now, edged with anger, not fear. I'm the leader of your clan. I'm the leader of your clan. Or have you forgotten that? Not for much longer, Tiger Claw growled. I'm going to kill you, and kill you again, as many times as it takes for you to join Star Clan forever. It wasn't until I read that exact line when I started to think, okay, Tiger Claw is for sure the main bad guy. I thought it was ambiguous this whole time. But no, he's the bad guy. He's bad.
So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain, making Tiger Claw, at least for me, an untwisted twist villain.
So Tiger Claw is exiled from the camp, and since Blue Star no longer trusts anyone else in the camp, except for Fireheart, she promotes him to clan deputy. Meaning, at the start of the series, Fireheart was here, below everyone in the clan, and by the end of episode 3, he's already here, second in command, next in line to be leader.
But the cherry on top, this terrible news cake, is that our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, isn't done doing main bad guy things. Shadow Clan just made some pretty significant changes to the clan hierarchy.
Our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, who was the biggest proponent of cat purity, by the way, switches teams and becomes the new leader of Shadow Clan.
He finally got his wish of becoming leader and getting 9 lives. We're dealing with Tiger Star now. Then Tiger Star sets a pack of wild dogs loose in the ThunderClan camp, and they end up killing random background characters.
It's one of those wild feral dogs that kill cats and tear off faces. Oh, it's so the horror! I'm getting attacked by a dog! Ah! Oh, wait, I'm wearing makeup. Maybe you should.
The dogs chase Fireheart off a cliff and into some rushing water, and right as the light begins to fade from his eyes, Blue Star swoops in and rescues him.
But I guess that used up the last of her energy because, in a horrible twist of fate, she's now dying. And it's her last life, by the way. I've been keeping track.
This one's for you, Blue Star.
Okay, so, she's out of the picture. Fireheart, the current clan deputy, becomes the new leader of ThunderClan, which also means he's going to change name.
His new name is Firestar. All right?
It's not Fireheart or Firepaw, and it's certainly not Rusty. This is Firestar. This will be the last time that he changes names. It's physically impossible for him to change names again.
Unfortunately, this moment was spoiled for me. I always knew that Rusty would be the leader of ThunderClan because while I was researching this video, I remembered this classic fan animation I saw ages ago about Fireheart not liking waffles.
Oh, waffle time, it's waffle time. Will you have some waffles of mine?
So I watched this video again for entirely research purposes and was horrified to see the video was actually called Firestar Doesn't Like Waffles. This video was a pretty big spoiler for me. So Tigerstar and Firestar are now both topped to the nines new lives. If we're ever going to defeat Tigerstar, he's going to have to be eliminated 9 times. Voldemort only needed 8 times. It's going to be a race of cat and cat to see who will be the last cat to lose their final life. And with the amount of books that are still in this series, I could see their rivalry lasting a really, really long time. Until this series goes in a direction that I think I should mention spoiler warning again, because wow. If you're at all familiar with this story and know what's about to happen, I bet you've just been dying for me to get to this part. To help accomplish his destroy Firestar by any means necessary plan, Tigerstar teams up with Blood Clan? Here's my mood board for the secret sixth clan that's been here this whole time. These are the extremely tough city cats. They live in the city that we've never heard of before. They don't have strange double syllable names or believe in a star clan, but they still call themselves a clan and have a clan leader for some reason. The leader of Blood Clan is Tiny. He's this tiny little black cat that wears a dog teeth collar. And he's a fan favorite. That's what all of this has been building up. You see? Scourge. 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 I'm Scourge. I already pointed at myself. I know I've been doing a lot of Harry Potter references throughout this video, but I don't think there's a single Harry Potter character that best encompasses who this cat is. I think the best fictional character I could make a comparison to is Shadow the Hedgehog. So how are they going to fight two evil clans that formed an alliance? Well, the thing is, Tiny Little Scourge betrays Tigerstar and murders him in front of everyone. But that's okay. He's got 9 lives, remember? Wait, what's happening? Again, the massive tabby's body grew still for a heartbeat. But again, the wound was too terrible to yield to the healing trance. His claws tore up clumps of grass in his agony, while his screeches turned from fury to terror. This is a kid's book. He's dying 9 times! Holy sh**, said Firestar. Tiny Little Scourge kills Tigerstar so badly that he dies, resurrects, and then dies again 9 times. So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain. They got me twice! Initially, I was in denial. No, Tigerstar canonically had 9 lives. He can't die instantly to a cat we just met. This scene had me so flabbergasted that I had to reach out to someone. And everyone I talked to about it was always like, oh, you mean Scourge? I love Scourge. Scourge is so cool. And then I thought, okay, if this cat is so beloved, I should at least give him a chance. Maybe this whole time, the books were actually setting up how evil and ruthless this Scourge guy is. You thought that cat was the main bad guy? This new guy just killed him with barely any effort. This also sets up that Firestar's brand new 9 lives are essentially worthless because this new cat can just kill you and have you instantly burn through all 9 of them. Well, not instantly. Slow and painfully. Which is definitely worse.
All right. It's a little unconventional, but if this is how the series sets up the actual main bad guy, then let's do it. Scourge, you've won me over.
When Scourge and Firestar face off for control over the whole forest, Scourge very easily kills Firestar, because of course he does. Firestar is just a random kitty pet who stumbled his way up the clan hierarchy. And this is Scourge. ultimate life form Scourge.
Firestar
dies. Except this time, when Scourge kills a clan leader, he only loses once. One life. He only dies once because of the power of friendship or something. I think it's a metaphor for Jesus, actually, and I'm not making that up. Unlike Tiger Star, Firestar successfully, I'm keeping you away from your, like, friends and family. Firestar successfully resurrects, and Scourge is very understandably caught off guard by this because he's never seen a cat do that before. So this time when they face off, it goes a little like this. And that's how season one of Warrior Cats ends. As you know, we frequently get to visit and see what wacky antics the cat angels get up to in Cat Heaven. And while Tiger Star's ghost makes a pretty prevalent comeback, basically becoming the new Cat Satan, we never get to see Scourge or his spiky collar ever again. How is a cat who only shows up in this much of the story, kills the main bad guy, and then leaves and never comes back this beloved? It's because he's the ultimate life form, baby. If the only knowledge of warrior cats you have is from what I've told you in this video, while you do know more than the average person about warrior cats, you're still probably not going to understand what most of these fan animations are really about, because we only looked at 6 books out of like 100, and you don't know what the characters actually look like. I've just been showing you Garfield characters. However, my dear viewer, I really wanted to get the full Warrior Cat experience. So I read season 4. This is 4. Shit. I've read season 2, season 3, and season 4. Really just trying to get the full Warrior Cat experience. Season 4 seemed like a good stopping point. I also forgot to mention, I read the Super Editions too. It was like 27 books. 27 books. I've read 27 books this year. Get on my level. I didn't want to do all of them. I'm not crazy, okay? I'm in a padded room. I'm not crazy. So with me as your local Warrior Cat expert, I can safely say I still have no clue what most of these fan animations are about. It's not my fault that I don't understand these. Most of the things that these people are animating aren't even canon. They've just been animating fanfiction this whole time. Cleopatra takes a character who's not even that prevalent and imagines her as an Egyptian sphinx cat who has, like, no ties to Egypt at all in the books. Next up forever, what if Firestar and Scourge switched lives? And Firestar was the one with the spiky collar. Holyfawn, all right, this one's got a giant snake monster in it. Mr. Fear asks the question, what if there was a zombie outbreak in Warrior Cats? Scavengers of the Wind, this one's also got a zombie theme going on and is genuinely the most terrifying Warrior Cat animation I've ever seen. I was legit watching this on my TV and I had to turn it off halfway through because it was so terrifying. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It took me reading almost 30 books to finally understand that Warrior Cat fan animations aren't meant to be understood. It seems like people just like drawing cats. But why is that?
Now, I actually have 5 different reasons why I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats. And the first reason is because cats are just fun to draw. Think about it this way. Would you rather spend years studying human anatomy, toiling away for hours trying to get the fingers right, or would you rather just draw a dumb little cat with a new woo face? Reason number 2 is the expansive world. This is the official Warrior Cats family tree. There's quite a few characters that I skipped over. I once heard someone describe Warrior Cats as Game of Thrones for kids, and while I've never seen or read any Game of Thrones, I totally agree with that sentiment. It's even got the incest and everything. Since there are so many characters and little mini-adventures, it's very easy for someone to have a favorite character or moment that they can connect with, regardless of how prevalent they are in the story. And the third reason I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats is the lack of official art at the time. These days, Warrior Cat fans have official graphic novels that they get to look at, and I do own them, but I keep lending them out to people, so that's my bad. But in the early 2010s, all fans had to go off of were words and their imaginations, which I think made people more inclined to draw out their favorite moments in the series, regardless of how graphic and gory they were. In fact, the kids really like drawing the graphic and gory stuff. That's a conversation for another time. The fourth reason I think people like drawing these cats is how this series is perfectly set up to be a fandom.
Is that what it says?
Perfectly. That's hilarious. Creating your own Warrior Cat OC with a tragic backstory and a unique double-syllable name is not only very easy to do, but it's actually encouraged by the books themselves. At the back of some of these books is this, like, fully plotted out Warrior Cat D&D campaign inviting readers to pretend to be the cats. I always thought the kids during recess who pretended to be the cats were just very devoted fans, but they were just following the instructions the books clearly laid out for them. And the last reason I think people like drawing these cats is because their passion is infectious. I highly recommend you go down the same Warrior Cat fan animation rabbit hole that I did, because what you'll find is thousands of dedicated fans all creating art of their favorite book series. And they're not doing it for money or for views, but because they're passionate. And there's also, like, a bunch of videos that are over 15 years old, and that just makes me nostalgic for that early era of YouTube. I went into this video trying to understand what it was about this series that made people want to draw the cats, but the funny thing is, I ended up drawing these cats too. It's a virus. These cats are so drawable. I initially got my start online creating webcomics. It's something I enjoy doing. I love thinking of a joke, doodling it out, and sharing it with the world. That's my passion. And I guess seeing all of these passionate artists creating these fan animations looked like a whole lot of fun. And the fact that the main character is a ginger male cat, come on, that's just too perfect of an opportunity to do a Garfield reference. I don't think anyone's ever done that before. So me and my team created 40 Garfield-inspired Warrior Cat webcomics, and we posted them every Wednesday. And even though we didn't make any money off of them, I really enjoyed making them and posting them every Wednesday. And not to get too vulnerable here, I know these are just Garfield comics, but they really helped me find my passion in creating art again. So thank you all for reading them. I hope you enjoyed. So if you're someone that's missing a little passion in your life, try watching hours of Warrior Cat fan animations. They're a whole ton of fun to watch. They do get a little violent at times, so, you know, be aware of that. And if you're someone that's ever produced a Warrior Cat fan animation, thank you for inspiring others to follow their passions. And if anyone on the Aaron Hunter team is watching, I hope you know you've made a lot of kids furries. That's all I'll say about that. Thank you all for watching. Have a good night, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you all for joining me in this deep dive into the wild world of Warrior Cats. I know this is a pretty different video than I usually post. I had my face in it for a lot more than I usually do, but this video still took a long time to make because I read all of these books, and there was a period of time where I thought I could talk about all four seasons of Warrior Cats, but then the script was just way too long, and I thought season one was good enough on its own to be its own dedicated video. If you like this video, let me know, and I can do more Warrior Cat videos. Thank you all for watching. I hope you enjoyed, and wear your seatbelt.
I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school.
Oh man. What is poetry?
I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask the class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died!
Haha, yeah, they do that.
But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time." Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now, hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they- Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So, why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school? Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool, though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch so I can just do this during lunch. Ah, look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your 9th grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place? Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place? IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turned into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word the, but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character. And Mr. Poe said, oh no, that's just a typo. Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl! This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sort of like riddles, but more stupid. You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why? Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant, how do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education.
It's funny because he dropped out of college.
So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song, anyone can dig a hole close enough to a ditch, but it takes a real man to call it home. Which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues. Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff. So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to hide the body.
The older I get, the more I've realized how much time I have to set aside just to clean. I'll ask a friend, what'd you get up to last weekend? And they'll think for a bit, and then say, I just cleaned. Crap, I gotta do that too. I've seen people, therapists, and the elderly all